It's time for Jim Cates at CJ Online. News, opinion, interviews, and community conversation, live and online. Join Jim and his guests by calling 295-1150 or emailing jim.cates@cjonline.com. And now, from the Topeka Capital Journal and cjonline.com, here's the Dean of Talk Radio in Topeka, Jim Cates.
Good morning, Topeka. Hey, Monday morning. We have two delightful young ladies joining us in studio, Coralie Evans, Lisa Cusick. They are the co-owners of Brick House Antiques, a longtime sponsor of the show. And folks, if you have any antiques that you would like appraised on the air, well, we can certainly do that. We're going to spend about, 20 minutes or so talking about antiques, whether they're a good, bad investment. I would imagine that Coralie and Lisa are going to say, yep, antiques are a good investment. But we're going to continue in that vein at 9 o'clock Monday morning. I've got Jerry Germanprey coming in. Jerry's been another regular guest on the show. And we're going to be talking about the wild, wacky, wonderful world of coin collecting. So that's coming up as well. And gold is absolutely going through the roof. There is a diminishing supply of gold on the world market, especially in view of the fact that India just purchased one half of the International Monetary Fund's gold reserves. So if you own gold or if you own gold stocks, you ought to be a happy little camper today. But something that might not make you quite as happy, this is a very, very, very sad week in the wonderful world of broadcasting. A sad week indeed. Lou Dobbs, no longer on the air. Out of all of the national talk show hosts, in terms of integrity, I would have placed Lou Dobbs number one. Sorry to see him go. Lou Dobbs has assured all of his fans and supporters that he is not going to leave the national arena, but nobody really knows what that means yet. Maybe elective office is in his future. And we've got a guest today, regular guest, one of my favorites. He's got the answers to virtually everything political. Maybe, Bob Beatty, you have the answer. Where is Lou Dobbs headed? And I see you're wearing your 27 TV shirt today, so as an official member of the media.
I was going to ask you that, Jim.
What do you think he's got in mind? You know, Lou Dobbs is 68, I believe. So in 2010, I think Lou Dobbs is going to be knocking on the door of 70 or will be 70. So if you if you're looking at Lou Dobbs and his political future, you know, 70 years of age starting out, I don't know.
Well, but
what do you think he's got in mind, or do you know?
Obviously, it's just speculation, but I would lean toward him running for office. I think he
at
was
70.
Well, yeah, but he certainly looks good on television, and of course, Ronald Reagan got started very late, in the sense of with the presidential run. He was governor for a while, but Ronald Reagan was president into his 70s, and Dobbs doesn't look, to be honest, doesn't look that old. So if he's not feeling old, he's probably, you know, he's probably okay. I mean, when you think about it, his platform at CNN was tremendous. So if he doesn't run for office, what's he going to do that would be able to match what he was doing in terms of getting his message out? I would say. So
there's some speculation out there that he might be headed to Fox, because CNN truly has carved out, you know, this moderate position. You've got MSNBC, the far leftist. You've got Fox on the right. And CNN, in fact, I view CNN, I'm starting to watch more and more of CNN for a lot of different reasons. Anderson Cooper, I think, probably is as balanced of a journalist as there is on TV. But Lou Dobbs really didn't fit that CNN mold.
No, he didn't. And yes, certainly he could go to Fox, but that I don't think that would really match his statements on his final show. I think he, on his final show, he made an indication that he was going to be more directly involved in issues, and if he went to Fox, he'd be doing many of the same things he was doing at CNN. And you're right, CNN wasn't too pleased, because they don't want their show hosts to be so involved on one side of any particular issue. So they were probably amenable to him leaving, but you saw his statement, I assume. It really sounded like he wanted to get right into the heart of, probably, you know, obviously illegal immigration, but maybe some other issues. And to me, that sounds like advocacy and possibly running for office. And I know his name was bandied about last election. And
I kept hoping.
Some reports had him thinking about it, and I do think he was considering it.
Yeah. So you think he's going to run for the roses, make the run for the big one?
I don't know about the big one. You know, I think this is one of, and you bring up his age, which is a good point. But when you think about who is in the heart of the debates over health care, illegal immigration, taxes, all the big issues, it's the U.S. Senate. And, I mean, look at Olympia Snowe, for goodness sake. One senator from Maine, you know, is treated like, you know, a royalty. And he probably won't do this, but I think one of the mistakes people like Steve Forbes and even Ross Perot and others probably make is that they don't first run for the Senate and then make it, you know, get heavily involved in issues and then think about the presidency. A lot of people really like Steve Forbes. Well, he could still be in the Senate, you know, working on the issues he loved instead of, you know, making two runs for the presidency. And by the way, that's exactly what Hillary Clinton did. And it didn't work. She didn't end up in the presidency, but, you know, she's still actively involved in American politics, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, Steve Forbes, of course, if he would have run for the Senate, would have been running for a Senate position in New Jersey. And which would have been a rather difficult state, possibly, for Steve Forbes to have won in.
But
Lou Dobbs, same thing. Lou Dobbs is from New Jersey, and as far as I know, he still is a registered voter in New Jersey.
Right, so, but that we know that's not very difficult. Just find a state where they need a senator.
Hillary Clinton.
That's right.
Bobby Kennedy. John McCain.
Alan Keyes. You know, Maryland. He lost, but
he went to Maryland.
We went to Illinois, remember, and ran against Barack Obama.
That's right. He was from Maryland and went to Illinois.
He just moved there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't that big a deal. He lost because of other issues, not because he moved there. For some reason, the U.S. Senate voters tend to be, oh, you'll be a senator. You won't be in the state that very much anyway.
Yeah.
Senators are sort of quasi-presidents in their own way.
Well, you know, there was this group behind John McCain when McCain came home from Vietnam, and McCain wanted to run for office.
That's
and they said,
right.
What state do you want to go to? McCain says, just point me to the path of least resistance. They said, well, why don't you move to Arizona? Which he did, and of course.
And Bill Richardson wasn't from New Mexico. He was from the East Coast, went to prep school out in the East Coast, played baseball. Then decided he wanted to find a place where he could run for office fairly quickly, and he ended up packing all his stuff in his car and driving to New Mexico. And that's exactly what he did a few years later. Now, it doesn't help. It's nice for these guys like McCain and Richardson. They end up in places like New Mexico and Arizona, isn't it?
Interesting as can be. Well, Richardson, I guess I just always assumed, was a native New Mexico.
No.
Because he does have his mother is Hispanic, I believe.
His mother.
It wouldn't be his father, Richardson. And it would have
his mother was from Mexico.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
And then he grew up in Mexico City.
Yeah.
And then ended up at prep school on the East Coast.
Interesting.
But I
think world of politics.
It will be very interesting. Yeah. You know, it's still too early. I mean, almost every off-year presidential, non-presidential election, the party in power suffers quite a bit.
Lou Dobbs, so let's talk about Lou, because I know you came in to talk
that's
about
why
something
well, I'm
entirely
saying,
different.
Well, I'm saying it's a good, it'd be a good environment for him to run.
Lou Dobbs, you know, who would he appeal to? Now, he appeals to me for two different reasons. One, the illegal immigration issue, I think he's been absolutely right on target on this issue from day one. The war. Lou Dobbs has been steadfastly against the invasion of Iraq, the invasion of Afghanistan. Once again, I think Lou Dobbs has been right on target. But you take those two issues. One's going to appeal to the right.
Right.
One's going to appeal to the left. Can he pull from both parties, or is he going to be, is there polarization from both parties? Is that going to work to his advantage or disadvantage? Are there that many people out there like me that have been opposed to these crazy wars from the get-go, but also opposed to illegal immigration? Or is it going to be a polarizing situation?
Well, that's what makes Dobbs interesting, is that years and years ago, when I first years, I mean, we're talking a long time ago, when Rush Limbaugh first hit the national scene. I have a recollection of him being somewhat Dobbs-like, meaning he was critical of Republicans and Democrats. And, of course, Glenn Beck was rose to popularity for being critical of and making fun of basically all politicians. And then Limbaugh and Beck both strongly, you know, went to sort of real an anti-democratic sort of programs. Mm-hmm. And now Dobbs, that's why you, when you mentioned Fox, yeah, if Dobbs just goes to Fox, that's pretty easy. I mean, because it's pretty easy just to bash one side over and over. What Dobbs does so far is more difficult, which is whoever is in power that he believes is, you know, not doing the right thing, he's gone after. He went after President Bush, and now he's being critical of the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. And that then strikes this idea of third party or, you know, some middle ground, or not necessarily middle, but some chunk that's not necessarily associated with either party. And on the, it's a little more probably on the right, because the illegal immigration issue has been more associated with Republicans, but and also independents. I'd say Republicans and independents. But on the left, we have also a chunk of people that are sort of Schwarzenegger types, who are social liberals, but fiscal, you know, try to be fiscally conservative. They don't have a home often. And so a guy like Dobbs, could he marry some of these groups that aren't really overly pleased to be in either party? Maybe that's what he's thinking. If he ends up at Fox, and we know that doesn't happen, if he is exploring other things, he may be thinking there might be room for, I don't know if I should say third party, but a movement of coalescing people who aren't pleased with either party.
Yeah. But because of his stance on the war, I don't know, as you say, whether he would fit into the Fox mold, because you have the Karl Rove of the world, you know, coming on the Hannity show every other night saying, let's find somebody to shoot and a country to invade. I don't think that would be Lou Dobbs.
You wouldn't think so, no.
Not at all, because he's been very, very critical. Of course, he was of Bush and McCain, but very critical of Obama.
That's right.
For not taking a stand on the war, meaning bring these troops home. And that's been Lou Dobbs' mantra.
So what are the options? I think if we throw out the Fox option, which is certainly an option, that's what Glenn Beck did. I mean, talk about someone out of place was Glenn Beck in his last couple months on CNN.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I remember he'd be on Headline News, and I was saying, oh, my gosh, wow. And he ended up where he wanted to be, which was Fox. So, if Dobbs doesn't end up there, I think his options are presidency, and I think the presidency in a third-party type movement, which would be really interesting. I think he could generate some attention, and he'd be the most interesting candidate, obviously, since Ross Perot.
Oh, he's in that Ron Paul, Congressman Paul mold, you know, because Congressman Paul.
You're right.
Paul,
yeah.
Very strong on the immigration issue, very strong on the war issue. Ron Paul, you know, in the campaign, said, get these troops home.
Who ran as a Republican because he knew that he'd get invited to the debates, the primary debates. Mm-hmm. He'd be able to get more attention, whereas if you're an independent named Ron Paul with not a big name recognition, he wouldn't have been invited. So he,
bingo.
That was a good decision by Paul, because he received so much attention because he had to be invited to, what, 15, 20 debates, where if he'd ran as an independent, he wouldn't have got much attention. And I agree that I think then Dobbs probably was inspired, not necessarily by Paul's voting, electoral success, I mean, number of votes, but the fundraising possibilities.
Oh, boy.
I'm sure Dobbs is being told, listen, what you're espousing under the Ron Paul sort of ideas can raise quite a bit of money. So that he's probably being told that. So now that we talk about it, I am thinking very possible to he's contemplating the presidency in some sort of movement. I would argue he should look for a Senate seat, and then go on from there. Now, mind you, or even a governor, but because that's involved with illegal immigration. But mind you, a Senate campaign as an independent would also be very interesting. I mean, A lot of people still say that if Jesse Ventura had jumped into that Minnesota race, we'd be talking to Senator Ventura right now. And I think there's a lot to that. I mean, you look at that Minnesota race with Franken and Coleman, talk about a lot of Minnesotans said they plugged their nose and voted for one of them.
Yeah.
Ventura had gone in there 38%. I think he could have got it.
Yeah, and a lot of Minnesotans would have held their nose to have voted for Ventura. Not the most popular individual in Minnesota, but as you say, neither were...
But he could have carved out...
Neither of the other candidates either, Colden and Franken. Yeah, I mean, this truly would have been the lesser of the three evils. But I would agree. I think Ventura would have been elected. Interesting as can be. So, you know, now it's time to pull out the map, I guess, to see where there would be a possibility of Lou Dobbs relocating.
And what seats are open,
now for a Senate position. I don't know.
Well, it's probably too late. Well, Connecticut, of course, Chris Dodd is in trouble in Connecticut. And he has two Republicans opposing him. But again, if he's an independent, he doesn't have to worry about, oh, there's already Republicans.
And an independent, this wouldn't be the first rodeo for an independent in Connecticut.
That's right. And
you have Lieberman.
And exactly. And Dodd is in trouble. And one of the Republican challengers in Connecticut is the World Wrestling Federation's leader's wife, Linda McMahon. Now, I'm nothing against her, but you got a little bit of an Al Franken thing going on here, where if she got the Republican nomination, many Republicans might not be happy. Well, you know, do we really want one of the wrestling people, sort of like Al Franken.
Or kind of like Jesse Ventura.
Right. And if Dobbs stepped in there, they might say we'd rather have Lou Dobbs than the established politician Dodd or a wrestling lady, basically. But it's hard to tell what he's thinking. I mean, the way he gave that talk at the end of his broadcast, at first I thought exactly what you mentioned. I thought, oh, he's going to Fox. And then when he gave those comments, like, he might be, but it sounds like he wants to do more.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see this develop.
Very interesting.
Yeah, you betcha.
I think he was sort of itching to do something last election, but decided not to. We talked about it early on, and especially when Obama was just starting and the field was he hadn't really started, and there was, I think, an opening. I think Dobbs was very tempted.
Yeah, we talked about this two nights ago. There was a group of six or eight of us together. A couple had never watched Lou Dobbs, didn't know much about him. The others did. And the perception of Lou Dobbs, Republican or Democrat, it was interesting. Pretty much divided right down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, friends we were talking to about Lou Dobbs' future. I think there were two or three that said, "Out, Lou Dobbs is just an old-fashioned, old-style Democrat." And there were those of us that, or there were those that said, "No, he's more to the conservative right in the Republican Party." I view Lou Dobbs as kind of a Ron Paul libertarian third-partier. So I don't know. This is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he's always going to tick off people, a certain amount of people from both parties, just because he's been so critical.
Yeah.
And no matter what, we know that people from the parties sometimes, I'm using the word sometimes, close their ears to people like Dobbs, even if he's correct about something, because he's critical of the party.
Bob Eddy's with me, and when we return, we're going to be talking about a recent, the Docking Institute poll?
The Docking Institute at Fort Hays State University did a State of Kansas poll over the summer of 2009, which was interesting.
We'll talk about it when we return. Jim.Cates at cjonline.com if you have a question or a comment. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Savings for everybody. We're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay, hey, we're back. Tomorrow morning, big game on TV. Well, it's going to be on a few TVs in Topeka. If you have the Versus Network, whatever that is, we don't have it at home. So if you plan on watching the K-State-Missouri game, it starts at 11:30, and boy, do I have a suggestion. One of our sponsors, Jeremiah Bullfrogs, they've got every sporting event known to man that's on TV. Well, you can pick it up and watch it at Jeremiah Bullfrogs, and this being a prime example. So if you want to catch the K-State-Missouri game, it's on the Versus Network. 90% plus of you probably can't pick it up on your traditional Cox system, so head to Jeremiah Bullfrogs, 29th and Wanamaker. Great food as well, and again, if you like hot, spicy buffalo wings, it doesn't get any better than Jeremiah Bullfrogs. They've got the best in town. Best I've ever eaten anywhere. But they are hot, they are spicy, but they've got traditional food as well. Check it out, 29th and Wanamaker. Okay, back to Bob Beatty. We're talking about a recent poll that was conducted by the Docking Institute. And the Docking Institute of Politics is located at Fort Hays State, which to me is rather curious how Fort Hays State ended up with the Docking Institute, other than the fact that Ed Hammond is probably the most creative, aggressive Regents president we have in the state of Kansas. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
And Hays has a strong Democrat connection because of the, oh boy, help me out, the Democrat family, Norman... Oh, what was
Dreiling?
Dreiling, the Dreiling family. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't bring the materials that.
But maybe the Dreilings.
Somebody could
brought,
let us know. Yeah. But I don't know how long the Docking Institute has been around. But it's wonderful to have it out there. Obviously.
Yeah. You bet.
To perform sort of an interesting analysis of public policy. It's the Docking Institute of Public Affairs at Fort Hays State University. Yeah, and it's great to have it out there.
Okay. Now, I assume this Docking Institute, they were conducting a statewide poll. These basically, would they be viewed as professional pollsters? How much credence can we put in these results as far as polling data?
Well, it's, you know, at the national level, we have so much good polling data, which is wonderful,
yeah,
that we can look at. And at the state level, it's the opposite, because most of the polls we get, Jim, are commissioned by somebody who's linked to an issue or a candidate. And so when we get an independent poll by a third, basically a third party, who's like this. Even it's great to have, even if there are some, you know, flaws and we can overlook. One thing with this poll is that it was done throughout the summer, rather than, you know, 2 or 3 days in time. But I think it's still valuable to look at it because it was a very high sample size and the margin of error is quite small, just I think 4-some-odd percent. And so, you know, I think it's a valuable poll to use.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've read the polling questions, of course. Are you satisfied with the way the questions are phrased? Because we know if it's a non-professional pollster conducting a poll, you can get and pull just about any results you want to pull statistically just by the way that you phrase a question. Bob Beatty,
right.
you're in the business. Were you comfortable with the wording?
I am.
Okay.
I'm comfortable with it. And again, you know, we take polls as what they are. We use them to just sort of get a sense of the mood of people. And I think usually what I look at is polls as a sort of a guideline, a general sense, and look for some sort of extremes that may be out there or lack of extremes that go against our conventional wisdom with candidates or with issues. And this poll asked a variety of things, and a few things that I found very interesting was I actually found the healthcare questions to be very interesting. And I guess the reason is that our elected officials at the national level, from the Senate and from all the House districts, except for Dennis Moore, of course, he's a Democrat, are quite adamant against the health care bill. But when you look at this poll on the state of Kansas, you don't see that vehemence. You don't. When you hear some of our elected officials, you'd think, "Oh, Kansans are just basically hate, you know, the healthcare bills that are going through the House and the Senate and from President Obama." And they didn't ask specific questions about the healthcare bills, but there is in Kansas there's a general mood that something needs to be done, and the question is a sort of flawed health care bill that's coming out of D.C. I think everyone agrees that it's going to be a cobbling together of some things that might work. For Kansans, is that better than nothing? And I don't know. This poll doesn't answer that question. But
okay, how's the question phrased? What I've got here, a friend of mine, former Shawnee Countyan Dwayne Rain, now lives in northern Texas, and he happens to live in the congressional district that was represented by a former Congressman Sam Rayburn. It's now represented by an 80-year-old Republican. At any rate, they just recently conducted a questionnaire on health care.
Mm-hmm.
So we can compare that district possibly with what the results are in Kansas.
Well, what the Kansas results are here, a majority, 56%, said they thought it was a responsibility of government to make sure all Americans have health care coverage. Now, what I'm saying, Jim, is that even if the poll has a higher margin of error, you know, we're talking 5-7%. So it flipped the other way. So a majority thought it wasn't the responsibility of government. A lot of the discussion in Kansas, to me, always sounds like this assumption that most Kansans think the government just needs to stay out of health care. Well, this is 56% said the government's job, one of the government's job, is to make sure all Americans have health care coverage. 56%. And
now here's an example, though, of, you know, how you can phrase a question, I think, Bob Beatty, and pull the results you want to pull. Because in Texas, Congressman Ralph Hall, in the 4th Congressional District of Texas, here's the way he asked the question: do you favor a health care system that is run by the government or run by the private sector? And I think the results would be predictable. 62% said private sector, 32% said the government. The others didn't understand the question. But again, when you say private sector versus government.
Right, that, I mean, that's a different question than this.
Yes.
This is much more, I think, a fair question, which is it the responsibility of the government to make sure all Americans have health care coverage, which is different. That question is just saying, should the government step in to make sure, for example, that the private sector is being fair, or that it's not you know, cheating people, or that it's allowing people to get health care coverage. Mm-hmm. And most, in this poll, most Kansans agree that the government needs to step in. So that automatically says several things that in this health care bill a majority of Kansans agree with, such as you can't be denied for pre-existing conditions, and there's sort of this idea that everybody needs to be covered, and the government probably should be doing something to ensure that. So this doesn't touch the quote, the public option, which is so explosive that it's probably, you know, I don't know what kind of results you'd get whenever you put in that sort of thing. I think the poll does sort of go haywire. Here, in this sense, it's not, you know, in this poll, the majority of Kansans were saying, well, the government needs to be involved really and somehow in making sure that everybody's covered. How that gets done, as I said, is a bigger question. And that's sort of where all this, what Washington's doing right now. The other thing that I found interesting, Jim, and I think this maybe is possibly unique to Kansas, is that in Kansas, at least, over the summer, people are still quite optimistic about the economy. Right now, you still have a 65% of Kansans saying that the economy is okay. So,
really?
53% are at least saying it's good, it's okay, and in a higher level are saying it's adequate. But so, I guess that's just interesting to me, in that people in Kansas so far aren't panicking, and so that should be a sort of a model for our elected leaders not to panic either, but to basically, I think, do what Governor Parkinson's so far been doing, which is his response, and my guess is he's read this poll too, and maybe has his own polls out there, but Governor Parkinson's response to the deficits for this year. Immediately, we're very calm. You know, he said, we can manage this. We'll figure it out. And from this poll, Kansans are not panicking yet on the economy, which is good, I think, because if you panic, I think that does affect consumer spending and psychology and all those sorts of other things. They are worried a little bit, but they're certainly not panicking. I found that interesting, given, you know, all the
Our unemployment figures, you know, of course, are much lower than the national average, you know, unless you happen to be the misfortune of being a laid-off aircraft worker in Sedgwick County.
That's right.
You know, Sedgwick County is getting hit pretty hard as a result of this economic downturn.
Which might be an opening, by the way, for Raj Goyal, the Democrat, for that 4th district seat, but that's probably, you know, that's a later discussion, but he's running for that open seat, Todd Tehart's old seat.
Well,
he may run on an economic platform.
But that gets back to the debate. You know, a year ago, six months ago, if you would have polled that question, who's responsible for this economic downturn? You know, 90% plus would have said Bush and Karl Rove and that group of people. Today, more and more people are saying, well, Obama.
Oh, yeah.
And you get a year down the road, now this becomes Obama's problem
sure
in 2010.
No question about it. Your president,
even though Bush,
the good and the bad,
set the stage.
Doesn't matter.
You, 2 years later, if Obama hasn't solved the Bush mess, then it's Obama's problem.
That's right.
Which Goyal, then he's possibly out the window. It's going to be difficult for him to run on that issue, isn't it?
Not if he can localize it. You know, he could be successful, or at least competitive, if he localizes, if he gets the national Democrats basically out of the picture. And don't forget, that's what, you know, Lynn Jenkins in this last election, yes, she ran against Nancy Boida and Obama, but she also in the primary ran against Jim Ryan and her own party. So that was basically, she was localizing it. She's saying, I'm not going to act like my party, and yet she didn't alienate her party. So
amazingly,
Goyle
so.
Could do the same thing. He could say, don't look at me as a Obama Democrat. Look at me as a guy from the 4th District who's fed, you know, wants to get this economy going.
Yeah, the Jenkins election, Bob Beatty, convinced me that I am so far out of step with mainstream 2nd District voters because of two reasons. You know what you hit on. One, I thought Nancy Boyd's constituent service was as good as we've had anywhere in a long time. She had a wonderful staff in terms of constituent service. I thought her vote against the stimulus bill would have been her key to reelection. Two, and three, I thought Lynn Jenkins bringing a Bush into this district for a fundraiser would have absolutely killed her. I think that's what killed Jim Ryan when Jim ran for reelection and was defeated. And on election eve, here comes George W. Bush, one of the most unpopular presidents has ever graced the nation's arena. You know, and Lynn Jenkins managed to pull it off. I didn't think Lynn Jenkins scored very well in the TV 27 debates. That election showed me that I'm just out of step. Apparently, I wouldn't have.
That election dumbfounded everybody. So. You're not. You're actually in step because you were dumbfounded along with everybody else. So
yep.
You're not out of step.
Well, that's good to hear. Good. I feel better. A little.
Also, interesting questions on the funding. Again, we tend to think Kansans are very conservative about taxes, and they are in many cases. But 52%. Thought that education funding should be held the same or increased, 52%.
That absolutely astounds me.
So, I mean, basically, they do not want to, I mean, I don't take that really as an increase, but the majority do not want education cut.
You know, and that shows me the conservative right has done a very, very poor job getting the message out to the public. And I go back prior to the Supreme Court's intervention on funding public education. Bob Beatty, it didn't make any difference what measurable statistic you were taking a look at. Kansas was in the top 25%. You know, we test fourth graders in Kansas. We test eighth graders in terms of math and reading skills. Before we increased funding for public education, Kansas scored again in the top 20%. You know, on both fourth and eighth graders being tested, our graduation rate higher than the national average. Again, we were in the top 25 percentile when you take a look at SAT scores. Again, Kansas scored very well. That was before, you know, we increased funding for public education. We had a good system in place before. We didn't need this massive increase in public education funding. And here we go again. You know, 52% of Kansans say, well,
52%. I misspoke, I think. 52% said funding for K-12 should be increased. 93% say it should be maintained at its current level. So after all the influx of money, which is much higher than it was.
7% said we need to reduce it back to prior levels.
Cut education.
Again, I'm out of the mainstream.
What's interesting, also interesting, though, is that when they're asked about higher education, 43% favored increased funding. So a lower support for the university funding. I'm guessing that some of that might, you know, not the only reason, but one of the reasons I think was some of those stories that came out, 6 months in the last year on the financial packages from, where was it, K-State, the athletic department, and things of that nature, and the buyouts. And so there's probably more of a, people have maybe more of a thinking that money's getting wasted at the university level. We just haven't heard those types of stories.
Well, sure.
At
you
the
know,
K
if you're not
12.
A sports fan, you're looking at
you're
these
like, yeah, why is
dollar salaries given to Bill Self? And
or when a coach leaves,
yeah.
You know, Ron Prince, that was it.
Yeah, $3 million buyout. Yeah.
Or remember there was a buyout for a assistant athletic director? We talked about this before. I always thought, you know, you get an assistant athletic director and he comes in and says, well, I'm going to leave. Instead of offering him, a contract with a buyout option, you say, well, good luck. You know, you're replaceable, yeah. But apparently not at some of these athletic yeah. departments. But so obviously that I think that's impacted the public a little
sure,
bit.
Sure, there's got to be a little pushback. You know, if you're not a football or a basketball fan, you've got to be scratching your head. Now, we're paying our college professors $100,000 a year, and we're paying that can bounce.
We are? Wait, where's that? Quick.
Somebody that can throw a ball or kick a ball. You know, now we're looking at $1 million a year salary. So,
Look
what we have.
When asked about energy. Oh.
John Arnold.
Oh, my gosh.
Krispy Kreme.
He's
donuts.
Torturing us.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
When asked about energy, I found this interesting. You know, basically a question, what's the future of energy? Where should we be putting our resources? They offer different options. Wind, 60% said yes, definitely wind. Solar, 48%. Coal, 18%. Nuclear, 19%. So you talk about all this hubbub about coal, and the end result is only 18% are basically really big coal fans, and you know, wind energy has a really strong support base. So, and I know Governor Parkinson has been behind this, but we're talking about whether he's going to run for office or not. But I think a candidate who really, you know, let's say a governor or even a senatorial candidate who gets behind wind energy, I think has really got a heck of an issue behind them. But
depending on where you're going to locate these wind
that's
energy.
That's right.
Plants.
Exactly. I mean, if you go into
can't do it in the pristine Flint Hills.
If you go into northeastern Kansas and push wind energy, and then sort of say, well, we'll figure out where, you know, and we'll deal with the complaints. Later, I think there's going to be some support there. 60%, you know, basically favor and are strongly supportive of wind energy. That was interesting. And coal, no, I mean, despite all this and all the economic, I guess what I'm saying is we know the economic benefits are fairly realistic because it's been talked about so much. This company wanting to come in the coal plant, and in this survey anyway, Kansans are not saying, yeah, coal is the way to go.
This is actually a resource that we have a plentiful supply of in America, and 18% of Americans favor it.
Kansans.
Yeah, 18% of Kansans.
Strongly favor. Yes, think we should be pushing it. Basically, that it's and nuclear. Again, nuclear also not much support. Although you know, there's nothing wrong. I don't mean that way, but nuclear power is. Is also a viable alternative in these times, but you know people are not in Kansas anyway. They're thinking wind right now. But I haven't. I think a candidate for governor could probably jump on that issue. But it's a real to me. It's sort of a gubernatorial issue. And as you mentioned, Governor Mark Parkinson has said he's not running. But it's been one of his babies for several years. You know, one of his main issues is looking into wind power, but if he doesn't run right now, he won't be able to do much with it in terms of electorally.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what Sebelius' position really was on wind energy. She certainly was opposed to the Holcomb plant, no doubt about that, but she also was opposed to wind energy development in the Flint Hills. So
she gave the Governor Parkinson quite a bit of room to look into that issue, and he spent a lot of time on it, but with this budget crisis, it's been difficult to push it because it's something you do have to invest in the transmission lines, and so money has to be invested.
All right, what else? And again, we're talking about the Docking Institute of Politics poll that was conducted last summer, folks. And the Docking Institute of Politics.
You're going to love this one.
Something. Okay. Do you have a question on there to where I'm going to end up being in the majority?
Yeah, you will be. You will be in the majority.
Okay. We're 0-3 so far.
No, you won't. Wait.
Okay.
Almost half of respondents. So you won't be in the majority here. Almost half. You're close. Half of respondents said they thought state spending should be decreased. So not a majority.
Almost half.
I mean, well, but it wasn't a majority. Well, it wasn't a majority that wanted it increased, but it wasn't a majority that wanted it decreased.
Isn't that amazing?
The majority said increase or stay the same or don't know.
Well, and again, it goes back to the your original question, too. How concerned are Kansans about the economic downturn? And it's just no big deal in the state.
For a majority, yeah.
For a majority. So I guess, again, if the economic downturn is no big deal for the majority of Kansans, why should state spending be? And we're certainly not seeing much done on the local level, city or county level.
Nothing drastic.
In terms of, you know, reduction of spending or even holding the line on spending. And not much better, you know, at the state level.
What we're seeing so far, we've seen cuts in education. Governor Parkinson made, what, 4 cuts in education. We're seeing talks about the closing of some institutions. But, obviously in today's paper, there's talk of these furloughs, which is a temporary cut in spending, of course. That, you know, if you close an institution or cut a program, that's permanent, right, Jim?
Mm-hmm.
If you get rid of this program, it's $5 million a year. It's $5 million a year cut every year because it's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you put employees on furloughs, you're just saying, let's get through this period right now. You'll obviously be working full-time once this period's over. So that's a temporary cut in spending to get over a hump, but it doesn't decrease the spending.
You know, rumors in the pipeline. There's always rumors out there in the pipeline concerning furloughs, concerning layoffs. December the 26th is the day. December the 26th, the day after Christmas,
yes,
is the day that we're looking at as far as the official announcement on layoffs and furloughs.
That's the day.
The timing just seems to be rather unique, the day after Christmas.
Merry Christmas, huh?
Merry Christmas, yes, indeed. John, the headphones.
One thing.
I'd love to have you join in.
By
the way, folks, here's another rumor in there, Bob.
Yeah,
you might
sure.
be interested in this. SRS is going to get, hit, with possibly 25 to 50 layoffs and looking at 150 to 200 furloughs. That's the latest rumor out there. That's what's coming out of SRS. So
that's
other
tough.
Agencies, I don't know. But that's where they're apparently taking a look at. Looking First is looking at SRS. So
that's tough. One thing, we had a similar economic situation in 2002 with Governor Bill Graves. It was about almost the same amount of money. It was about 400 and some odd million dollars deficit that Graves was looking at. And you may recall what he advocated. Cigarette tax, 65-cent increase per pack. A gasoline tax, I can't remember the exact amount. And then also a slight sales tax increase. But that cigarette tax really, really brought in the cash, 65 cents a pack. So I guess we've heard of targeted tax cuts. What Graves did was targeted tax increases. And that was, of course, interesting because he was a Republican governor. And also he wasn't running again for office. He was leaving. It was his last year in office. So yep. Parkinson...
And Bill Graves didn't feel any allegiance whatsoever to the conservative wing of the Republican Party because
they challenged him.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, again, was a social issue. It was all about abortion. But Bill Graves was challenged in the Republican primary.
That's right. He wasn't very happy about it either.
No, he was very unhappy about it. And as a result, I think, we did see a different Bill Graves his last 4 years as opposed to his first four.
Sure.
Because I was reappointed to serve on the Lottery Commission, and I'll never forget that every Graves appointee or individuals that Graves had hired that were serving at the direct pleasure of the governor, we were called into the House chambers, and this was shortly after the governor was elected. And we were all there, and Governor Graves addressed us, and he said, "Believe you me, when I ran on the platform of packing him high and tight, I meant just that. And if there is anybody in this room that disagrees with me, Joe DeLaTorre is in the back of the room and he's there to accept your resignation. We are going to be a fiscally conservative. This is going to be a fiscally conservative administration." And I think we saw that the first 4 years out of Bill Graves. And then the conservative right over this abortion issue shot
Kansas in the foot, in my opinion, by running David Miller against Graves. And Graves, for the next 4 years, was an unhappy, he wasn't a happy camper whatsoever, especially with the conservative right. Then we didn't see quite the focus on state spending issues. The last 4 years, we saw the first four. I don't know.
Yeah, he wasn't very happy at all. That's what he told us when we interviewed him.
Yeah.
And he said he went after his challenger with a political vengeance, meaning he really wanted to beat him bad. He said that.
Yeah.
Which is, Graves is not the kind of guy who usually does those sort of things, but he did in that case.
Yeah, you know, I've been asked, you know, that since I've been involved in politics, and that goes back to the days of Bob Bennett, it was my first political involvement in the state, to name the best governor and the worst governor.
Yeah.
And my answer has been Bill Graves and Bill Graves. Because I think Bill's first 4 years, he truly was dedicated. You know, not coming in, you know, with a slash and burn, we're going to cut state spending, but really keeping his eye on the ball. We're going to be responsible concerning state spending. And the last 4 years, I just saw a different, more vindictive, I guess, Bill Graves. And
well,
maybe for good reason, but the point being, it was just a different different style altogether.
Yeah, and he had a big challenge with, you know, almost $500 million worth of deficits, and a governor has to do something about that. And I just had looked up what Graves had done, and you know, almost ten some odd years ago in the same situation, and what his approach was these targeted, along with some cuts, but was a refusal to cut education at the time and targeted tax increases. And when Parkinson says all options are available, that's, I'm curious about this. I have no idea because he doesn't want to talk about it, but whether he's contemplating targeted tax increases, we don't know. I have heard some people mention the possibility of a sales tax increase, which brings you immediate money, obviously, because as soon as you put a sales tax increase in, from that second, every purchase, then cash register rings, your more money's coming in. And targeted tax increases can do that. I mean, if you slap 20 more cents on a case of beer, that money's coming in.
Oh, Lord.
That money's coming in tomorrow.
Let's pick something else.
Huh? Let's stay away. I'm trying to think. They've already done cigarettes, so alcohol, right? Isn't that the next logical?
But, you know, Mark Parkinson. And again, I don't know whether you have any recent polling numbers on Mark Parkinson or not. You know, we've talked about this before on the air. When Mark Parkinson seated the governor's chair, 10% of Kansas knew who he was.
It was like,
10 to 15%.
13, yeah, something like 15%.
Yeah, yeah. And then 90 days later, I think he ran studio and said, those that know who Mark Parkinson is, his favorables were very, very high. And that possibly can continue again through April of 2010, as long as Mark Parkinson doesn't make any pronouncements that he's going to run for anything. Because right now he's viewed and perceived as being the statesman.
But,
and I think, you know, Holcomb was a good example of that. But once Mark Parkinson
opens
that door just towards a jar a little bit, saying, well, maybe I might run for something in 2010, then he becomes a politician again.
And he can't, right. And he... I mean, the advantage of him not running is he can ask for a tax increase to the legislature and say, listen, I'm not I'm doing what I want, thinks best for the state. I'm not going to run for office because he's going to say, listen, I know I can't run and ask for a tax increase, which is probably right. He can't run for governor and ask for a tax increase because he would just get hammered to death by his opponent.
Sure.
So he does have more of an opening to ask for a tax increase because he's not running. So if he does, let me put it this way, Jim. If he asks for any kind of tax increase, we know for sure he's not running.
except that if he asks for that tax increase, just playing what if, Bob Beatty, if he asks for that tax increase as a non-candidate, he's not going to get blasted by the Republican Party because they don't view him as a threat. Because he's made the statement, I'm not running for governor, I'm not going to run for the Senate. So then you're not going to have, you know, these negative statements coming out of the Republican state headquarters about the bad Mark Parkinson of, you know, promoting a tax increase. It doesn't become political at that point in time because nobody views him as a threat in the future. But now if he's a candidate for governor, that changes.
You're right.
That changes the political landscape big time. So I guess where I'm going with this, on a scale of 1 to 10, Bob Beatty, and I know you've made so many accurate predictions on this show. May the 1st, Bob Beatty.
Yes.
Is he, the chances of him becoming a candidate, either A, to stay at Cedar Crest, or B, to head east to Washington?
Chances?
Of him announcing.
2 out of 10.
You'll give it a 2?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Of course, I'm the one that's, you know, if it was according to my analysis, Howard Dean, it'd be President Howard Dean right now.
But you predicted the vice president. You named those early on, you know, who... That was the first time I think I had heard the name Sarah Palin when you said, hey, this gal, she's got a shot at being McCain's running mate. And Biden, you called that one correctly, months before anybody else.
That's true.
Well, you and I both missed, you know, on the presidential side of it. Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Well, it was. Yeah, we've learned a lot.
We're not here to talk about the past, like Mark McGuire said.
Because I think, I know I was wrong on both of the vice presidential picks, so... But that's nothing unusual for me. Anything in the pipeline as far as rumors? 2010 political landscape.
Well, you probably know more than I do. The last I heard is that now Senator Steinacker is contemplating Secretary of State. Did you hear that?
I'm going to have Chris on the show a week from Monday.
There you go.
I believe, yeah.
You ask him. Is it governor or Secretary of State? It's just the rumors.
Yep.
But you can get it right from his mouth.
Yeah. Be interesting, because then you're going to have two Wyandotte countyers vying for Secretary of State. Kobach's moved to Wyandotte County.
But he's always been from up in the Kansas City area.
Yeah, he lived in Johnson County for a while, but he is a Washburn Rural High School graduate.
That's right. Yeah.
Because back in 1983, when I was chairing the Shawnee County Republican Party, we created a Landon Scholarship Fund. And it was basically for a high school senior that wrote the best essay dealing with government. And the first recipient of our Landon Scholarship Award back in 1983 was none other than Chris Kobach. So
there you go.
Yeah, yeah. So he got his springboard from the Shawnee County Republican Party. But Steinacker is going to be an interesting run, because Chris Steinacker...
Well, see, I thought Chris Biggs was going to run for Secretary of State. Maybe he will. So that's why I was surprised to hear Steinacker interested in that race.
Yeah.
You can ask him about that.
Steinacker's picking up no traction whatsoever as far as his gubernatorial run. Because Chris Steinacker, you know, he represents southern Wyandotte County. You have three state senators in Wyandotte County, and Chris Steinacker represents the southern third. It extends from east to west, from Missouri to Douglas County. That's his district. Very heavily Democrat. You're not going to elect a Republican in Chris Steinacker's senatorial district. But Chris Steinacker, to me, is no Democrat. He's libertarian. I mean, he would be in the Ron Paul / Lou Dobbs mold.
And which is, I think in Kansas, we know from years ago in Ross Perot, there's a market for that.
But certainly.
You have to have the money to let people know that's what you are. And that's the challenge, right?
Yeah.
I think someone with that philosophy could make some inroads in this state, but gosh, it takes money. You know, it's that chicken and egg thing.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have the money to let people know that's where you are, and that's hard because you're not in the party apparatus to get the money. So a guy like Dobbs, who's independently wealthy, he might be able to do it. It's just harder for local candidates. And now, quickly, you also know that Alan Keyes is coming to Kansas.
No,
he's coming to campaign for a 4th district Republican candidate. Congress.
Which one?
Jim Anderson.
Who?
Jim Anderson.
Who is Jim Anderson?
He's a small businessman who's running for Congress in the 4th District, in the Republican primary. I don't know much more except that he must be friends with Alan Keyes. Keyes is coming for a couple days, I think.
I'll be.
Do a speech, do a fundraiser.
So I've had Alan Keyes on
you
the
have.
Show on several occasions.
I was telling people, boy, you know, don't miss
well, you
your
met
chance.
Him.
Yeah.
You met him in Des Moines when we were
That's
all
right.
in
And
Des
I've heard him speak in Arizona at a presidential debate. So I told people, you know, if you can go see Alan Keyes speak, that's time well spent.
Yeah. Well, I know, you know, on the New Hampshire presidential debates, you know, people watching the debate, Republicans watching the debate, when polled, Alan Keyes won 2 of the presidential primary televised debates in New Hampshire. that didn't translate into support for Alan Keyes.
No.
Because he certainly wasn't going to appeal to a mainstream Republican, because he was slash and burn. You know, he
oh,
was,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Take no
definitely.
Prisoners.
Yeah, kind of a Lou Dobbs type again, as far as taking no prisoners.
So, he's coming to the 4th District.
Wow.
Well, I think the weekend of the 20th. Well, people can look up on Jim Anderson for Congress, his website. But I think it's the weekend of the 20th and 21st.
Interesting.
I don't know for sure, but I think that's the weekend.
Polling in the 4th District. Do we have any polling numbers
on
the Republican side of the ledger on who's leading?
Dick Kelsey released a poll. Basically, it was over 50, almost 50%. It was around 50% undecided. And then, you know, I think the candidates had basically roughly 16-17% support, Kelsey and Pompeo. And then the rest was scattered in small numbers. So that's a wide open race, Jim. Talk about wide open.
This is Jim Anderson, who I don't know. Now, if Keyes is coming to town, and I've got a lot of respect for Alan Keyes on the fiscal issues, you know, Alan Keyes can really get wound up on this abortion issue. And I'm guessing that's why he's coming to the 4th District to support. Yeah.
He must, yeah.
Pro-lifer
I mean,
Jim Anderson, there would have to be a pro-life connection there, I would think. But having said that, Pompeo's going to have the money in that race, isn't he?
Well, you would think so, but again, anytime you get three, four candidates, it leaves an opening for somebody to sort of sneak up on these, you know, the better-known candidates.
Yeah.
And Anderson's got people like Keyes coming in. He may be someone to watch.
I don't know whether I've got his phone number or not, but I will try to run him down. Bob, good to see you.
Yeah.
Let's get you back on the show. How about Friday, the 18th of December? That work for you?
That should work, as long as I don't think it's the 81st or somebody.
And folks, I screwed this up the last time. It is Friday the 18th.
Okay.
How's that? 8 o'clock?
Sure.
We'll look forward to it. Okay, on deck, Kevin Dole, John Arnold. We're going to be talking about the top stories of the week. We'll find out what Kevin Dole's top story is, John Arnold's as well, and that is all coming up on the flip side of the break. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back, and this hour is brought to you in part by the Golden Corral, Topeka's number one buffet, Kansas's number one buffet. In fact, the number one buffet you're going to find anywhere, folks. 16th and Wanamaker for less than $10, all you can eat, and this is quality food as well. If you're into health foods, well, they've got that as well. They've got it all at the Golden Corral. You need to check it out, and don't forget, on weekends, they have a breakfast buffet on Saturdays and Sundays as well. The Golden Corral, the best of Topeka. Good morning, Kevin Dole. Good morning, John Arnold.
Good morning.
Okay,
I don't hear myself at all. There we go.
There we go. Now
Hello.
You're hooked up.
Morning,
Jim.
I feel live.
Good to go. Good to go. John, to start with, where do you stand on blogging? I was looking for your blogs this week.
Yeah, Rick Anderson and I have missed in terms of getting it all set up. We had some kind of a glitch, and we just haven't worked it out.
Okay.
I've got to get back with him and get that done.
I was asked over the weekend. You know, you said you might have it up and running. And
Where is that going to be in the multimedia?
I think it is.
Multimedia
I'm
section.
I'm not entirely sure how it shows up there. That's part of the thing that I don't understand. Also, examiner.net's supposed to have a blog up with me, and I'll get that done this weekend also.
Great. Great. Yeah. Looking forward to it. Good morning, Kevin Dole.
Good morning.
Kansas Biz, this is going to be your Christmas issue coming up?
Oh, yeah. TK.
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 Biz, yeah.
Kansas Biz, that'd be more like Ken Daniels' website, kssmallbiz.com.
Yes. TK Biz, coming out when?
Right after the 1st of December, hopefully.
Okay.
We'll have, probably 2 years ago or so, 3 years ago, we had a picture in there of me and my former business partner dressed up as Forrest Gump sitting on a park bench with boxes of chocolates. And we said, TK is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. And so this next issue will, again, prove that. We just reinvented ourselves last issue, and we're going to do some reinventing again. It's going to be fun.
Good.
So you'll learn. See
very
some
business oriented now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Good. Looking forward to it. In fact, we've got a copy of your first issue here in studio for our guests to read as they come in. John, let's talk about the top stories of the week. John Arnold, what would your top story of the week be?
Well, I think it's a combination of stories, Jim, that all have to do with finance, whether it's city government or county government or state government. And you could also argue federal government, for that matter, given everything that's going on around there. But it's concern, you know, when the economy is so dominant in all of our discussions and concerns out there, I suppose finance is reasonable to be of concern. But as you were talking about with Bob Beatty, the state's trying to figure out how to finance a deficit of, what, $265 million, something like that. And the city is wrestling with how to put together a capital improvement program and capital improvement budget. And some disagreements about how to do that are included. And then, of course, the county still hasn't got the bank balances reconciled. And you wonder, gee, come on, guys. Management, management, management. You have to run things right, you know. And I think that continues to be an issue.
Well, the county, you know, spending $8 million on, you know, their little league ball diamonds, you know, in view of this economic downturn still concerns me. But taking a look at the city of Topeka, the long-term capital improvement projects.
Yes.
What, a 30% increase over the next 5 years? Were you surprised at that figure?
I didn't get a good feel for the entirety of the capital improvement budget, Jim, and I meant to call and get that information or look it up on the website, but I didn't get it done. So I don't totally know what what exactly they're doing at the moment. Tim tried to cover the story in his article, but it didn't get it all done, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of explaining it.
You know, you were here for...
The other thing is school finance also.
Yeah,
that's another piece of the whole puzzle.
You were here when Bob Eddy was talking about this recent poll that was conducted by the Docking Institute of Politics.
Yes.
Where basically 50% of Kansans, education funding, said we're fine the way it is now, or maybe even increase it would be okie dokie with us. The minority, there's a minority of Kansans that have said enough's enough concerning government spending. The majority of Kansans have said, go for it. We need more money infused into public education, which we don't, in my opinion. But, again, I'm out of the mainstream on this issue. Are you surprised? Were you surprised at the polling numbers showing the majority of Kansans really aren't that concerned about government spending, apparently, at any level?
No, Jim, I'm not, because how you ask a polling question often determines how you're going to get an answer. And when you just ask, are you concerned about spending, you're likely to get a yes answer. Do you think the state spends too much or should spend less? You're likely to get a yes answer. But you say, do you think we ought to cut social and rehabilitation services or cut the KNI or cut education K-12? You get a different answer when you get some specifics in there. And I think that question was kind of generally asked. Do you think we're spending too much? Are we spending about right? And it kind of predicts what the answer is going to be. So, but I think specifically people...
Yeah, if you're after a specific result concerning a polling question, you can phrase that question in such a way that results are going to be very predictable. No doubt about it.
Too much so, yeah. A lot of times they call that a push poll.
When
you push a particular answer in the way you ask the question, yeah.
Good point.
Can happen.
Kevin, your comments on...
Well, I was reading how they
spending.
The shopping list for the capital improvements program, I saw that was getting quite a bit of interest, because the things that were listed in the article were golf cart paths and and improved swimming pool at Garfield. You know, that was like $1.8 million.
Garfield needs a significant amount of work.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
It's easy to criticize those things, but some of those things might have a return on investment. I don't know how improved golf cart paths translate into more golf business to cover that. I don't see that. So I think that that kind of recreational shopping list, when they are not funding things that seem to be more essential, you know, just having that in the article gets people upset.
Sure. The golf cart paths, I was kind of surprised at the number of 695,000. That seemed high. I play golf at Cypress Ridge a number of times a year, and the maintenance has gotten significantly better. Now, whether that's due to Billy Casper's management group or because we had a lot of rain this year, I don't know. But the course was looking really good, except for the cart paths. And the cart paths have been a bone of contention for some years. Mm-hmm. And whatever improvements are made out there, if you don't do the cart paths, it's hard for people to appreciate those improvements. And it's been something that people that I played with and talked with out there have talked about. $695,000 does seem a bit expensive, but they also had $500,000, $520,000, I believe it was, for the Helen Hawker office and some kind of room, a bigger room. Well, you can build a fairly good size piece of business for that kind of money, and I doubt very much that they need that much, but you know, I don't know. I think if I were there, I'd say, look, an office needs to be a framed in structure like you would do a wood frame house. Doesn't need to be something built like City Hall for Helen Hawker, for sure. Don't know what the other building is or what the other room is, so I can't speak to it. But
Helen Hawker supporters are small, but they're mighty. And I've been railing about this now for 12 years that I've been on the air. And it's not that I'm opposed to Helen Hawker. I just think it could be better located. One, forming a partnership with the Civic Theater within walking distance of the Helen Hawker Theater. that would help the Civic Theater financially, and Helen Harker could be well served. They've got a children's theater now, you know, at the Civic Theater. Beautiful facility.
Oh, yeah. They've just
Eighth and Oakley,
spent a ton of money on that.
Absolutely. And they've done a very good job. Civic Theater truly is one of the jewels in Topeka's crown, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
It is. And we're going to build the new Children's Discovery Museum just down the street. Down
to the southwest corner, yeah. And, you know, we've used that land to fly model airplanes. So,
right.
You know, why not tie Helen Harker into the Discovery Center, A, which is going to cut the cost of the Discovery Center some, I would think, since we're talking about children. That's what Helen Harker Theater primarily is all about.
Sure.
Tie those two together or tie it into the Civic Theater. But, no, we're looking at a $500,000 expansion of an old tired building that
old
sits
bathhouse.
Yeah, that sits at the south end of the Topeka Zoo, which limits a future zoo expansion if we ever decided to get a zoo director that's competent. Then we might want to take a look at expanding our zoo at some point in time.
We need to expand the zoo, and that's a good idea to move Helen Harker completely out of there, yeah. Put it over by the Discovery Museum or part of it. I would think that would make some sense from a community development standpoint.
Absolutely, for yeah. a lot of different reasons.
A lot of different reasons.
Speaking
yeah.
of the zoo, the hottest news in Topeka among children was the death of the gorilla. I mean, I had my second grade Sunday school students tell me, the gorilla died. You know, they were really upset about that. They
yeah.
saw that in the news.
He was a beautiful gorilla.
It was.
John, when you were involved, CEO of Topeka, who was the zoo director at the time? Do you remember? I know we've gone through three since I've been on talk radio. I've had all three on the show. Well, Coker, I haven't had him on for quite some time because he's simply has made it a practice to avoid making any
there
more public appearances.
There was a Mike.
Yeah, and he was from Pennsylvania.
I don't remember where he was from.
And, yeah, very
but,
accessible.
Yeah, I think so. And he left, that would have been 99 maybe.
Uh-huh.
Then we hired David Mask,
uh-huh.
who came from New Mexico, Texas.
Okay.
Someplace like that, but had been in Omaha and Kansas City.
Right.
In zoos. And
there was another hire after that before Coker, pre-Coker days.
Oh, who was that in between Mask
oh,
and Coker?
Oh, boy. Again, he had worked his way up through the ranks, really up through the ranks, and was...
I thought they went to Coker right after Mask left.
Well, there was somebody before then. Cause this guy, very quiet, very introverted, but really seemed to have good working knowledge of how zoos should operate. He just wasn't the best communicator. But, so, for whatever reason, he lasted a couple of 3 years and then gone. Then we ended up with Coker. The thing that concerns me about Coker, and let's get your opinion on this, where we should go with all of this, my concern, there's two issues with Coker. One is competence, and the other one's trust. You know, I know nothing about running a zoo. I don't know that I could intelligently address the competence issue, how competent Mike Coker is or isn't. But trust, I can certainly address this one because he's been caught twice lying to the press, just out and out lied. Now, why we have a department head still on staff in any capacity in this city that can't be trusted is beyond me. Coker should have been bounced, in my opinion, long before now. Maybe because of the competence issue, but definitely because of the trust issue.
Well, when a football team loses again and again and again, you know, obviously it's a bigger problem than just the head coach, but they always replace the head coach. And in this circumstances, I mean, we've got a staff there, and we don't know what all the problems are, but we've got a hippo who dies with water in 110 degrees. We got a gorilla who mysteriously dies at about half age of the typical lifespan of a gorilla. We've got time and time and time again, we can't put it all on Coker, but he's the, he's in charge of this. And like you said, I mean, he's been caught not telling the truth. And, I mean, if trust is gone and we've got all these cases of dying animals under mysterious circumstances, I don't know.
Well, in the case of the hippo was pretty old. Picasso, what was she,
uh-huh.
37 or something like that?
Yeah.
And I remember 10 years ago being told that the hippos are towards the end of their life and we might lose one. And the scary part was, okay, if at that time we didn't have the outdoor exhibit, we just had the indoor. And so if you lost a hippo, it would be down in the water right on that inside place, and that's not an easy thing to get out of there. Now, the gorilla died, as the necropsy showed, from an aortic aneurysm. That can happen at whatever age to any mammal.
That.
Yeah, it was reported in the paper recently.
Wow.
And an aortic aneurysm can kill you at any age. You know, I mean, it's just a weakness in that blood.
That was odd, because they said that they didn't know it. There was any, he had no health
no
issues
symptoms.
Before then.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't know how you diagnose a weak aorta on a gorilla, for a human, for that matter, aside from, I think they do sonogram kinds of things for humans, but you don't normally, I wouldn't think you would normally do that kind of a physical on a gorilla, because you'd have to anesthetize it, and that's the most risky thing you can do, I think, with a large mammal like that. But so I can't be too critical that they didn't see that coming,
right.
You know.
But John Arnold, you know, in your former position, and again, 9 communities over 30 years, you were COO, CEO, CAO, CXO, whatever.
See something.
You held a lot of high-level administrative positions in local government. But looking at a department head, John, how many opportunities would you give a department head to lie to the media before it would be time to take action? I go back to this trust issue, which really bothers me. And I know I attempted to get Mr. Coker on the show on numerous occasions, absolutely steadfastly refused to come on. Now, my show, historically, I give the guests the opportunity to say what they want to say, and
sure.
With not a lot of intervention on my part as far as attempting to make the guests look bad. I don't do that, just the opposite. And he refused to come on the show because he had been caught twice, not on the show, but twice, just out and out, untruths to the media, shall we say.
What was it, the storks that flew off? Was
yes.
That, was that?
That was the first one.
I don't know what the second one was.
That dealt with the death of, what was it? I can't remember the animal, but another
wasn't
death
the zebra.
Situation.
Didn't we have a zebra?
No, that was too recent. This is,
yeah. 2003 was the stork issue, and then there was another one after that,
well,
but.
Answer your question, Jim. I think during my tenure, I would never have a department head tell an untruth to the media. Wouldn't allow that. But I have to tell you that someplace along the line, things have changed in that the attorneys have gotten involved saying to department heads, don't tell the full story because you might be opening us up to liability. And so when you tell a department head, don't tell the full story, you're saying, don't tell the truth. And that is unacceptable to me. And I've had a situation where, I had in California, for example, a lady called the 911 because her husband was had just recently had heart surgery, and he was having some kind of a problem. So she called 911. Well, the 911 dispatcher said, do you want a fire truck? Fire trucks are the first responders. They go first to any medical emergency and everything. Well, so the 911 dispatcher knew that. So she kept asking the woman, do you want a fire truck? She said, I don't want a fire truck. My husband needs an ambulance. Well, so do you want a fire truck? You know, come on, people. So I wanted, the man died because of the lack of response, you know. And so I wanted to tell people what the problem was. It was purely a communication thing. City attorney said, no, don't say that. We have too much liability. I said, that's wrong. You got to tell people. So they don't know. They don't know when she says, do you want a fire truck? That means you want the medical responders. And you want the dispatcher to know, don't ask them if they want a fire truck. And if they got a medical problem. But anyway, yeah, so there's something of a mixed message out there, Jim, in terms of what department heads can say and how they can say it. And that I don't know that that's affecting Mike's veracity or not, but I know it's a problem that bothers me.
Kevin, you want to comment on that before we move on?
Well, I guess the only other thing I want to say about the zoo is that it is my son's favorite place to go. And it is a wonderful walk in the park, and I don't know about all the ins and outs of everything that is not right there, but new exhibits and it is still a great place to go. So,
it is, and you know, we've had issues with the elephants in the past. That was probably 10 years ago when people were complaining about the treatment of the elephants, and at that time, we switched from I can't remember exactly what they called it, but it was active working with the elephants to protected working with the elephants, which means you don't work with them out in the field with a probe of some kind, but you put them inside this cage, and that's when you clean their feet and do all the medical kinds of things, which is really kind of fun to watch because the handlers, the trainers, the aides there do all kinds of things like whistle, and the elephant will raise its right foot or left foot, and then he whistles twice, and he'll put that down and raise his left rear foot or something like that so they can clean it. And then after they do it, they give him a treat. And he sits there and he says, okay, who's training whom here? The elephant raises his foot and he gets a treat, you know? Anyway, but it's fun to watch. The workers, the handlers out there work very hard. They do a good job. They try to do a good job anyway, and it's under kind of difficult circumstances because every year there is at least one zoo handler killed by an elephant someplace.
Yeah, one of the most dangerous animals to work with in a zoo.
The biggest, most dangerous is the hippo. They kill more people worldwide than anything else. The hippos do
in the wild.
In the wild, yes,
absolutely. You don't want to get between a hippo and water. Just pretty much.
Yeah. Well, there was I know there was one training course that we sent a bunch of people to, and it was on elephant handling, and they came back and said one of the things that we learned at this course was that elephant didn't just decide to kill you that day. He decided to kill you years ago. He was just waiting for the right opportunity. And, you know, that kind of makes you be a little bit more wary, doesn't it? I would think.
John Arnold and Kevin Dole, we'll be back. Jim.Cates@cgonline.com. If there's a story that you want us to comment on, we can certainly do that. And I think when we come back, it's Kevin Dole's story of the week. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're headed. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org. a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org. It's the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back. Dave Jackson's coming in at 10 o'clock, and we're going to spend an hour talking about gardening. Yes, indeed. It's all coming up at 10. Monday, we've got Coralie Evans, Lisa Cusey coming on at 8:30, and we're going to be talking about antiques. So if you've got a question or a comment about antiques, you can give us a call then. Preceding Laura, Coralie and Lisa, Tim Richer will be in at 8, talking about City Hall and courthouse issues. And at 9 o'clock, Jerry Germanprey is coming in. And we're going to be talking about gold. Folks, we just about run out of gold. India just bought one half of the International Monetary Fund supply of gold. And we're having difficulty finding gold. Gold miners, they're just about to run out. So gold is absolutely going through the roof. We're going to be talking about precious metals, copper, nickel, gold, what have you, coin collecting, the whole nine yards. And that's coming up Monday. And we are going to have an elected official who will be joining us around 9:20 Monday morning. That is the lineup. Today, Kevin Dole and John Arnold are in studio. We're talking about the top stories of the week. Heading in, we've talked about the zoo. And again, I might be coming down a little heavy on Mike Coker. And I'll just summarize it by saying, over the past 12 years, there has been less than 10 people, maybe a half a dozen at most, that have refused to come on the show. And Mike Coker being one of those. And to me, that always waves the red flag.
So it makes it easier for you to... That's a guy I'm going to come down on. Yeah. Come in the house here.
Yeah, yeah. Because, again, we make every attempt not to embarrass a guest when they're on the show. And I just I don't think there's any reason for somebody not to appear on the show. And we've had less than 10. We've had very, very good luck attracting guests. But Coker was one, so that always just kind of waves the red flag, or they're hiding something. Well, with Coker's track record, that possibly has been the case. I don't know. But let's move on. Kevin Dole, your top story of the week would be?
Well, I don't know if it's the top. It's not the. Well, I don't know if it's the top local story of the week. But I was thinking. I've been thinking about the H1N1 situation, and I've been watching. You know, seeing news coverage of the lines of people waiting to get the vaccine. Areas that there are, I've heard of areas in like New York that have an abundance of it, other areas that there's long lines and not availability of it. It's just barely available in Kansas. I've got kids in school. I've got my kids' friends who have had it. I know of several adults who've had it. I know I saw in the paper that a local lady without a lot of other health issues has died of it from somewhere around in the Topeka area. And I just wonder if it's a pretend of this is what happens when healthcare is managed by government. It's, you know, long lines, the government saying who can get it, who can get access to it, and who can't. That sounds almost like something that a certain former governor of Alaska had talked about.
But hasn't it always been that way on vaccines? You know, I remember the polio vaccine.
Well, we've known about this. Supposedly just another epidemic. This is they've been calling it a potential pandemic for over a year now. So they've had plenty of time to get ready for it and get the supply and get a distribution. And it just seems like a big problem with distribution and getting it fairly distributed out there, because there's just a lot of people.
Doesn't speak well, I guess, for, you know, government-run, government-controlled health care.
Well, right when a time when they're passing government health care in the dark of night on a weekend, you know, and you turn on TV and you see long lines of people trying to get vaccinated against this supposed potentially deadly pandemic flu. The two don't really go well together.
We got to bear in mind that private sector is building the vaccine, not the government.
But the government,
private drug companies are having trouble getting it generated, and they've known about it. And the government has said, "Go make your vaccine," and they're just going a little slow, and they haven't been able to increase the speed.
They got several companies making
it. Several companies, yeah, and still they don't have enough of it. And so you say, "Okay, why not?" Well, I don't think the government can say, "Okay, you got to turn that vaccine out faster than you're doing it." I've seen several execs of these companies saying, "We're cranking them out as fast as we can do it.
We like it.
Just as fast as we can go." But I guess it's just not coming. Something about the gestation period of the vaccine in the, I guess they put it in chicken eggs, and you have to have the right kind of chicken eggs, and then you have to put the something in there, and then it has to grow and something. I don't know how it all works. But it apparently is not something that we can just crank up the valve and say it goes faster. I don't quite know what's going on. But on the other hand, you know, think about those long lines. If it weren't for confidence in the Communicable Disease Center, CDC, of the federal government, saying, "Hey, it's a problem, you better get this vaccine," you wouldn't have those lines. But people in those lines believe the CDC knows what they're talking about. Then you've got the problem of the companies have to make that vaccine in such a way that the FDA approves it, and that's an important area. I mean, we all pretty much believe in the FDA in terms of looking out for what they're doing in terms of Food and Drug Administration, making sure that these things work. So, you know, I can't say that this is any kind of a precursor of any kind of government-run health care. Of course, we're not talking about government-run health care.
You just wonder about former government.
We're talking about government-financed insurance. That's all. We're not talking about government-run health care. Nobody's ever talked about
it. Well,
it's a matter
of just
former Governor Kathleen Sebelius.
Huh?
You just wonder about former Governor Kathleen Sebelius, and she's probably thinking, gee, I wish I was back in Topeka Friday nights at Uncle Bo's. This job I've got now, this hasn't worked out so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in a tough position.
Yeah, she is.
Well, it's I think it's just a matter of like I said, the government has known about it. It is they do have it. Like I said, they have it in certain places heavier than they do in others. So in some places there's not a line at all, and there's an abundance of the vaccine available. In other areas, like around here, I can't. I took my kids to their local pediatrician. There's none available. They have had clinics here at the Expo Center, but it's not readily available around here, and I don't know how fast it's coming, but we've had a lot of cases around here, and we haven't hit the peak of flu season yet, so
sure,
could
sure
be a scary time ahead,
for
parents. But I mean, because the strange thing about this this flu is it's not hitting the elderly like it is the younger people.
It's surprising. Yeah, at my age group, I am not in the at-risk group, so I can't get the swine flu vaccine. I got the regular flu vaccine in September. But, you know, I think maybe we've hyped this a little bit too much. I think the media, perhaps, I don't want to blame them necessarily because it's a story that everybody's interested in, but, you know, nationwide, annually, we lose 35,000 people to regular flu.
It doesn't seem yet to be a pandemic level, but they said they've been predicting it to hit that level. So,
and there's a fair number of people out there who don't want the vaccine because they're afraid of the vaccine. You know, because remember in the mid 70s when we had, was that called swine flu at the time, or
there was a swine flu in the
mid
70s,
and
yeah,
some of the people got Guillain-Barré syndrome as a result of this vaccine. In fact, I had a secretary in North Dakota who came down with it. But I remember we go to the armories and get that particular vaccine at that time. And now some people are saying, no, I don't want to take my kids to get that vaccine. But that bothers me some, because then you're putting the other kids in your school at risk. And as it turns out, my son and daughter-in-law and three grandchildren up in the Seattle area all had the swine flu last week or 2 weeks ago. I guess my son actually had it. I'm not sure that the others were diagnosed with it, but they were all sick about the same time. Yeah.
I need to give a quick plug to the Downtown Antique and Collectibles Mall, folks. They're located at 5th and Harrison. They're open 7 days a week. And again, if you've got some items that you want to sell, they're just items that are taking up space in your garage, your closet, your attic, whatever the case may be, you can take these items to the Downtown Antique and Collectibles Mall, 5th and Harrison, one block east of Topeka Boulevard, and place these items in the Downtown Antique and Collectibles Mall on consignment. They charge a third. They take a third of what the item sells for, and that's their commission for selling the items for you. Other than that, there is absolutely nothing for you to do. Just wait once a month for the mailman to come and cash the check. That's it. It's that simple. So, folks, check it out if you're looking for antiques, collectibles, and garage sale items, just unusual items, Downtown Antique and Collectibles Mall. John Arnold, Kevin Dole, I'm a guest. I want to get into my top story of the week, which has nothing to do with what's happening on the local or state level. It's just been a very, very sad week in the wonderful, wacky world of broadcasting. Lou Dobbs, off the air.
Kevin Dole, his last day? Yesterday?
Wednesday.
Wednesday?
I think he just walked off. He just said, yeah, I'm out of here.
Yeah. John Arnold, Kevin Dole, did either one of you watch Lou Dobbs on an occasional, regular basis?
Only if I'm flipping channels and I happen to see him. I mean, he's just not on my I don't think he's ever on when I'm watching TV. I know of him, and I know of about his general viewpoints and kind of his politics a little bit, but I don't follow him at all.
I don't watch him anywhere close to regularly, and I've only watched him occasionally. I know his issue was on immigration. Mm-hmm. He ranted about that for about a year and a half. But then he came on. They quoted him, and in fact, they played a little piece of tape yesterday of him, I think on his radio show, just livid, almost hysterical, about how he was opposed to anything that Obama did. He said, Mr. Obama, I'm opposed to everything that you ever want to do. Honestly, he just went berserk. I thought, what? Maybe it's time for this guy to get off the air.
Well,
well, he's a little stressed. He got shot at his house, I guess.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, that was in the news last week.
Yes, it was.
So he's making headlines.
But John Arnold, you know, Lou Dobbs basically treated Bush the same way.
Did he?
Yes. Lou Dobbs would be kind of in the Ron Paul mold, which I guess is one of the reasons that I have been a Lou Dobbs admirer and supporter. Because Lou Dobbs has taken a very strong stance, as you say, on illegal immigration. Lou Dobbs has also taken a very strong stand on the war. Feels that we shouldn't be in Iraq, shouldn't be in Afghanistan, bring the troops home, which is kind of the Ron Paul position. So it puts Lou Dobbs, I'm not sure where it puts Lou Dobbs on the political spectrum.
Yeah.
Because you've got the right-of-center conservatives that certainly agree with Lou Dobbs, you know, on the illegal immigration issue. You've got what would be perceived as the left of center liberals that certainly agree with Lou Dobbs on the war issue. I happen to be one of those as well, so I'm kind of a
liberal.
I think as far as pulling the troops out of Afghanistan and Iraq, that certainly isn't a Fox News position by any stretch of the imagination.
All right, yeah.
You've got the Karl Roves of the world and what have you, these people that appear on the Hannity show. They're all looking for somebody to shoot and a country to invade. Well, that's not Lou Dobbs. You know, that's more of the Ron Paul position.
Okay.
So, you know, speculation, Bob Beatty and I were talking about this, that Lou Dobbs might end up on the Fox channel. But I'm not sure that would work either, because
he's
Lou
not
Dobbs
right there.
Is kind of a libertarian populist. I think that either is going to pick up support from both wings of the Republican and Democratic Party or lose support, you know, because he can be somewhat of a polarizing person.
Yeah. I may have misinterpreted what I heard his closing remarks were, but it didn't sound like he was looking for another media gig. It seemed like he was being kind of taking a call to change the country or change the direction of the country or something to that effect. And
kind
and
of what Lou, Glenn Beck said when he left CNN Headline News, kind of the same type of statement. So it makes you wonder.
I don't know what he's looking for.
CNN was talking about the fact that they wanted to separate Lou because he's too opinionated and they want to be a broadcast news organization. They want to get back to that.
They don't want Obama to peg them as a opinion station.
Well, yeah, like Fox. You know,
like
Fox has their opinion, and
yeah,
they have their opinion. And MSNBC, to a certain extent, has their opinion.
Oh, they're mostly opinion.
And CNN saying, no, we want to be a news organization. We want to present the stuff and not be an opinion organization.
That's what Bob Hitty and I were talking about. Kevin Dole, John Arnold, you perceive it that way. I certainly do. You know, I look at MSNBC mm-hmm. to the left, Fox to the right, and CNN somewhat down the middle, and I'm in complete agreement. I don't think Lou Dobbs fit the CNN mm-hmm. mold at all, because CNN, the perception is they attempt to walk right down the middle, as opposed to taking strongly opinionated positions on any issue.
Yeah, one of the
Lou
analysts
Dobbs was very, very strongly opinionated on everything.
Yeah. One of the analysts said, MSNBC is slightly to the left and Fox is way to the right. And Glenn Beck is right of that. and Lou Dobbs was kind of misfit in CNN, particularly where they want to go. And then they had whoever the head for CNN was on saying we wanted to be more of a broadcast news organization.
I don't know. Chris Matthews on MSNBC, Mr. Thrill Up My Leg for Obama, is to the left as Glenn Beck is to the right, I think.
Oh, that's not possible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
And Keith Olbermann.
Oberman. I can't stand
it. I can't either. But I can't stand Hannity either, because I go back.
Oh, I'm with you.
Sean Hannity was so rude to Ron Paul in mm-hmm. the presidential primary elections. You know, Hannity fawned over every Republican candidate with the exception of Paul and just treated him so rudely. And Hannity's ego, to me, is way out of control.
He's also a party guy.
Yeah, he brings Karl Rove on the show every other night. And Karl Rove, you know, this was Bush's advisor. And, again, I look at Bush getting us into this mess. Obama's not helping us getting out of it. But, I don't know, there's just so many things that I dislike about Hannity anymore.
Glenn Beck doesn't give a hoot about Republicans.
No, he doesn't.
Not at all.
Beck is a conservative.
Yeah.
He's not a Republican. Yeah, I would agree. But John Arnold, Kevin Dole, we are all coming from a little different position on who our favorite, most credible talk show host would be. Because our political positions, all three of us, we have a little different view.
Talk show host.
Who would be
my favorite?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm trying to think if there's any one
that
I'd like to listen to.
Let's take a look at John Arnold's best and worst. The best and worst.
Wow. Well, the few times that I've listened to Glenn Beck, he's just awful. I mean, 97% of Glenn Beck's statistics are made up. As they say, most 87% of all statistics are made up, including that one. But to my mind, he just fabricates things and to make his points. And so I don't much care for him. Now, who else is a talk show host?
Who would be, Beck's your least favorite. Who would be at the top of the heap?
Wow.
Radio or TV?
I don't spend a lot of time on talk show host. I suppose, probably the NPR guys that do Morning Edition. I used to love Bob Edwards when he was on Morning Edition on NPR, but he retired a few years ago. Garrison Keillor. There we go. He's my favorite.
Who?
Garrison Keillor. He does Prairie Home Companion.
All right. Kevin Dole?
Well, I used to like Glenn Beck a lot when he made me laugh, but now he makes me want to curl up in a fetal position and cry myself, because he just distresses me so much. So it's too stressful to spend too much time on that. But I used to spend, and I still do. If Limbaugh's, I enjoy the Limbaugh show. I think it's still a lot of fun. But probably the TV program I enjoy the most would be, as far as interviews and such, would be O'Reilly. I think he's a hard interviewer, and sometimes he's a bit abrasive and everything, but he's got an ego. I don't know how he gets his head through the room anywhere, but I think he's a really good interviewer, and he's fair. And when Obama came in, I thought that was a very fair interview, and so I still like the factor.
Yeah, I would put Lou Dobbs and Glenn Beck to a certain degree at the top of the list, because Glenn Beck, John Arnold, Kevin Dole, the thing I like about Glenn Beck, he's a flamethrower. no doubt about it, but I really think it's coming from the heart. I don't view Glenn Beck as an entertainer. I view Glenn Beck as a causer, somebody that is in this business because he believes to the core of his soul. What's coming out of his mouth is coming from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I appreciate that from anybody, left or right, you know, that truly is a causer. And I've always viewed Glenn Beck more of a causer.
And I respect him because he's not a party guy. I mean, he's totally independent of that. And but he is awfully distressing.
Yeah.
Well, because of that, because he really believes that we are heading down a socialist road. And he points out every symptom of it. I haven't read his new book, Arguing with Idiots, but it might be a...
I haven't either. And I enjoy Glenn Beck on TV. I don't particularly care for his radio show. I don't know. But I've got a lot of admiration for the fact that I think he truly is on the air because he wants to change the face of America. Mm-hmm. He's not looking for increased ratings. He's looking for changing the landscape of America. I don't know. The two most offensive to me... Sean Hannity, ego, and again, I remember how he treated Ron Paul, which is one of my icons of, I think, what a politician, an elected official should be, and the Karl Rove, the fawning over George W. Bush, a lot of reasons I don't care for Hannity anymore, and I would also put Keith Olbermann in that same category.
I agree with Keith Olbermann. He's just snarky, obnoxious.
Yeah.
Pretentious.
Well, the one thing you got to give Keith Olbermann is that he always refers to Rush Limbaugh, the comedian, which is good because Rush Limbaugh is entertainment. You know, at some place he started taking himself seriously, and he shouldn't. When he says, I'm standing here with half my brain tied behind me, you know, and the excellence in broadcasting network. Now, you got to know he's putting you on just a bit here and go with that. But. Then
well, he thinks he's the smartest man in the room. So.
I know. He takes himself too seriously. And that's fairly recent. I think when he was having fun with it and raising sand at Clinton, and you know, that was entertaining.
Well, it is entertaining, but I get a lot of good information out of it. I think I think he's a hoot, and he's still going strong. I listened to him in 1989 or so on my little radio when I worked for the state. And I was probably one of his first listeners when he came to Topeka. I used to go down at remember the Little King restaurant down on 8th Street, I think it was. And they had a rush room.
Had a rush room.
And
yeah.
Capital Journal sent an article, a reporter in there, and to do a big story on the rush rooms. And
really?
I got quoted in there, and then I got made fun of by my colleagues.
Of course.
Yeah, so many great stories about Rush Limbaugh. He was actually married into our family. I've told the story many times on the air for 8 years.
Your family?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Well, Jane's family.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
For 8 years. And when he left Kansas City, of course, he was fired by KMBZ because he had no talent, spending too much time talking, not enough time spending the records that he was paid to spend. And the manager at the time, Walt Lockman, I believe, was managing KMBZ, said, you just don't have any talent. So a friend of his was managing a station in Sacramento,
right,
at the time. And this station was at the bottom of the ratings heap. I don't know how many stations there were in Sacramento at the time, maybe 20. Well, the station was ranked 20th. They had no listeners. So basically, this guy just hired Rush out of pity just to help a friend and said, come out, we'll give you 2 or 3 hours on the air, do whatever you want to do, because nobody's listening anyway, but it's a paycheck. So Limbaugh loaded up, him and Michelle loaded up the car. They had a U-Haul van that they were towing behind the car. They didn't have enough stuff to fill a U-Haul truck. They were towing all of their worldly possessions in a van headed to Sacramento. And I don't know how many people were following Rush and Michelle out of Kansas City, but whoever was following them, these were bill collectors, because they owed everybody. And, you know, the guy hit Sacramento. Within a year, he had taken this little station in Sacramento from the bottom of the ratings heap to the top, and, of course, the rest is history. But funny story. Yeah, when he left Kansas City, he had nothing.
He's generally credited, I think, in the broadcast industry with creating the talk radio for now.
Well, he's a talented guy. I mean, give him that. Whether you like his politics or not, you got to respect him for being a very talented.
Very talented individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a time, you know, a couple of years ago, I thought Limbaugh sounded like he was broadcasting from the basement of the White House, which offended me. But the talent was still there, you know, as far as the humor, whatever you wanted to. Yeah.
See, Hannity doesn't have that. Hannity is, I just don't get how he has much of an audience, because he's just got that, I don't know if it's that New York thing going on, or I just don't know what it is.
He's just acerbic all the time.
Yeah, he's acerbic, and he's just grating, and I would generally agree with most of his politics, but, I mean, it's over the top with his fawning over everybody, regardless of, you know, the things he'll say about a Republican. He would criticize a Democrat for, but then never go back and see his own hypocrisy for having supported a Republican for doing the same kind of thing.
I think anytime Karl Rove is on as a guest, they need to introduce him by the lovely nickname that George W. Bush gave him, Karl Rove.
The brain, or the architect, or what?
Turd Blossom.
That's even better.
Isn't that something? My best friend calls me Turd Blossom.
Bush had a funny nickname for everybody.
Yeah, he did, but that was that's the top.
They should do a book on his nicknames for people.
Yep.
How they came about.
I hope they don't do a book on George W. Bush. I just hope we can forget the fact that he was there for 8 years. It was an embarrassment to those of us that are conservative,
yep.
An embarrassment to the Republican Party, an embarrassment to America. And I hope we've seen the last of the Bush family in elective politics. I'm afraid we haven't, because what frightens me, 3 years down the road, we're going to be looking at Mitt Romney, and we're going to be looking at Jeb Bush running.
Probably so. Probably so.
Yeah.
Can't imagine Jeb Bush. He probably would have been the better candidate from the onset, but I can't imagine that the Bush name is going to get him very far.
Yeah.
I think there's Bush and Clinton fatigue, so I don't think we're going to win.
I hope you're right.
We haven't seen the Mitt Romney fatigue yet.
No.
And just think about the most liberal state in the country, Massachusetts. There's not Republican to be found, I don't think, in the state, other than the voters of the state of Massachusetts. They elect a conservative Republican
from Utah, Mormon. Yeah,
in Massachusetts, there's something wrong with this picture,
or there's something really right with Mitt Romney. You know, he sells something very well. Well, he's been married for 30 years. He's got 4 sons, 2 of which are in the military, and all 4 have done Mormon missionary things, I believe.
Who's the true Mitt Romney? Now, if you're true to your principles, if you're truly a Republican Mormon, how do you win election in Massachusetts without selling your soul? You know, the true, dedicated, conservative Mormon principles aren't going to sell to that rank-and-file Massachusetts Democrat voter.
Unless your opponent is just a train wreck.
Well, but also, my guess is that he would not have tried to tell or to sell Mormon principles. Any place. I mean, you know, separation of church and state. You say, hey, my religion, I'm not Catholic, I'm not Mormon, I'm a politician.
We've seen Romney flip-flop on just about every stance he took when he ran for governor of Massachusetts.
Really?
And then a few years later, running for president on the social issues, I think he flipped on virtually every one. Now, Romney's back out here in the hustings, you know, to speak.
Well, if it wasn't for that, he would have beaten McCain. But everybody saw that. I mean, they see how he ran in Massachusetts versus what he was saying, and that didn't play well.
We've got to take a break. Dave Jackson is on deck. John Arnold, we will see you next Friday, and hopefully we'll have an announcement coming soon on.
Sure.
On your blogging on CG Online.
Yeah. No, next Friday. Yep.
Good. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. Kevin Dole, we'll see you in about 3 weeks. And
sounds like fun.
TK Biz, it's going to be on the stands. It's going to be out
right after the first of the month. So
very good.
Maybe, probably by the next time I'm here.
Very good. Sounds good. Okay, Dave Jackson on deck. Stay tuned, folks.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay. We are back. And emails, well, I got one a couple of minutes ago. It's too late, Mickey. We'll talk about your issue Monday morning. Good to hear from you. Okay. Good morning, Dave Jackson.
Hey, good morning. Got to get okay, this thing up you. Here. There we go. There we now go. You got them. We're good.
Now you're good to go. Let's talk about tomorrow's game.
Let's do.
K-State, Missouri, 11:30.
Another 11:30 game. That means Annette and I get out of bed at 5:30 in the morning and get the van all loaded up and try to be over there before 8 o'clock and unload the van and set up. And I think we're having hamburgers and some seasoned potatoes and then all the fixings that go with that. Have about 18 or 20 people over.
Oh, boy. Fun stuff.
Yeah. Last week we had, of course, about 25 or so, half of which were KU fans. Wasn't that last week?
Yeah, that was last week. Mm-hmm. This week, you know, last week I just had a pretty good, I had a good feeling, you know, that K-State was going to have a good day, and they certainly did. They won the game 17-10. This week, what do you think? Your thoughts.
I'm just thankful when K-State shows up and doesn't look like they did against Texas Tech. That's all. If they've taken a limited amount of talent and really maximized it. I never thought I'd see K-State be able to run the ball like they do. Fullback
Thomas
is just amazing the way he hits that hole and then shows that fight before he goes down. I mean, if they're hitting two or three tacklers on him, he's not going down. It's just amazing. And it's amazing that line that couldn't block for spit last year can make holes this year. It just amazes me.
Coaching. You know, Snyder should be Coach of the Year. Mm-hmm. Big 12 Coach of the Year for sure, if not National Coach of the Year, what he's done to turn this team around is just absolutely amazing. The Snyder miracle. The thing that concerns me about tomorrow's game, though,
is
it's a meaningless game, so to speak, other than a K-State win automatically gets them into a postseason bowl. But the big game is a week from Saturday.
Right.
Because that ultimately will determine the winner of the Big 12 North. Then you're possibly looking at the big dance being a BCS contender.
Right.
The whole nine yards. I don't know. My fear is K-State going to be looking ahead to the Nebraska game a week from tomorrow, rather than taking care of business with Missouri?
I
don't know.
It's always that challenge, and Snyder focuses on just keeping the game in front of him, the focus. And
getting away from the week-to-week emotionalism. Yeah.
Right, and keeping the guys from believing that they're better than they are or overconfident is certainly a challenge. Young men adopt a hubris sometimes after they've had some success that may be unfounded.
Yeah. Well, it's possible. You know, they could sew up the Big 12 North if K-State beats Missouri, and then if KU beats Nebraska later on in the day, because I think K-State plays at 11:30.
Right.
KU comes on at 2:30. So it's possible, you know, they could lock up the Big 12 North.
KU has the ability to beat Nebraska.
Absolutely they do.
Force Nebraska into the turnovers and avoid their own. They could make it a cakewalk. Actually, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
And Reesing, you know, he's the type of kid you want to see succeed. He is the role model kid. 4-point student, never been in trouble. He's not a thug. You know, he truly is there for an education as well as, you know, leading KU's football team. And I hope Reesing ends up with a couple of victories. I just really like the kid. You know, I didn't want to see KU win last week, but I didn't want to see Reesing have a bad day either.
No.
These are the type of people I'd like to see succeed.
Sure. Of course you would. I mean,
yeah,
absolutely. Just a good kid.
By the way, I was not aware until I just received an email that last Saturday was your birthday.
It was.
Yes. Terrence.
Terrence, right.
Yeah. He says, I hope to see you both at the game tomorrow. Well, not going to see me, but you will see Dave.
We'll be there. Same place, Terrence. We'll look for you.
Yeah. Now we're going to go to the Sprint Center. Mm-hmm. We're taking the grandkids, or the grandson, one of the grandsons, to the Sprint Center the Saturday after Thanksgiving to see K-State play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Grandson's never been to the Sprint Center. Nancy and I have been once. Have you been over there?
No, yeah. I have not.
It's nice. It really, it's a great, great facility. So thought this would be a good time for the grandson, who's going to end up in K-State in a couple of years, to see K-State play basketball in a venue that he's never been to. That's going to be fun stuff, which has absolutely nothing to do with lawn care or gardening.
Right. No, but it was fun to talk about. Yeah, it was. So anyway, it's time. We turned around. Our October weather's coming November, and that makes just an excellent time to continue enjoying your lawn and or your garden out there if you want to do that kind of thing. And, of course, winterizer time is now. It's time to winterize your lawn, and folks are hauling the winterizer out by the truckload practically. So that would be a part of Annette's tip for sure in the paper as you've got it out there today. And make sure that, but there's three options on winterization, and they are, if you've got weeds coming up, and this would include those folks that did their overseeding back first weekend of September, that all that seed that they planted is now up and you've mowed it once, maybe even twice. If you scarified, or in other words, sliced your lawn, it's a good bet that there, you've got a bunch of chickweed or henbit coming up as well, because you did scarify that seed, got it up to the surface, and it takes that opportunity to come right on up. So if you need to do the weed-free zone with the fertilizer, combine those two to kill those weeds so that you don't have a crop of flowers next spring, this would be the time you would just upgrade from winterizer to the weed-free zone plus fertilizer, the Fertilome product, and that'll kill those weeds. That's an option and a plus alternative to keep a good-looking lawn next spring and keep seed from germinating the following fall. You don't get the flower, you don't get the seed, you don't get the germination.
Okay, you mentioned, you know, for those of us that overseeded the early part of September. Well, I kind of did.
Kind of, sort of?
I threw some seed out. This was the Tri-Power seed.
The Tri-Power, right.
That I got from Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. Great seed, by the way. But I basically just threw it out in an area that you can't reach with a hose, because we've got an acre and a half.
Yeah,
so
that's
the seed was just kind of laying there.
We sell hose, Jim.
This would take a long one, believe you me, to get to the back of our backyard. But having said that, we haven't mowed this new seed three times. It's just now really starting to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And the blades, they're little cute little thin things. They're tiny little things.
I'd wait on that.
Okay, in other words, don't come in with
the
treatment for henbit, chickweed, clover.
Right.
Don't do that now.
Don't do that now, right. But that's not probably a good idea if you haven't mowed it and fattened up that blade a little bit. That's what you want to do first, is mow it. And you should be mowing down at 2 inches now at this point in the fall. A good short lawn is good.
But if it's just a short little seed where you really haven't had that first cutting.
Right. Just use the fertilizer instead.
Just use the fertilizer.
Right.
Okay.
Wait on that. We can address it early next spring as well with a different application. And, of course, the weed-free zone comes both in a granule and a liquid. If you'd rather, you can't reach it with your hose, but you could if there are some problems. Later on, you can still, this weed-free zone works in when the temperatures are even down in their 40s. That's what makes it so different than a lot of your other broadleaf weed killers that require a 55, 60-degree temperature to actually be effective and move through the plant. Weed-free zone with a carfentrazone chemical added to the Trimec makes it really extra effective. The other situation where I mentioned earlier, there's three types of ways to winterize: just straight winterizer plus weed free zone, and then the Fertilome for all seasons we've talked about with the prodiamine, used to be called Barricade. And that's one that will prevent weeds from germinating next spring and all through the summer. So you can get that down now. What that does for you is saves you an application next spring. Mm-hmm. You get that down with your winterizer, and you combine then an application that that you would have to be doing next spring. So that's the third choice in winterization. We've got, with the new technologies, we've got a wider array of products to address specific lawn problems. And so it's always important to know what your problems may be, if you have any, and if you're lucky enough not to. I mean, that means just keeping your lawn fat and healthy and preventing, and in doing that way, I mean, you keep the weeds from coming up. Weeds come up in lawns that are thin, typically, or weak. That's kind of the way it is. So if you keep it fat and healthy, that's one of the first steps to keeping a good lawn.
On that note, let's take a break.
Let's do.
Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center 2, our 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road. And folks, anytime you have a gardening or lawn care question during the week, weekends, 7 days a week, here's the number to call, 232-3416, 232-3416. And believe you me, Jackson's, there's going to be a professional answering the phone that can answer virtually any question you might have. Take advantage of it. Or you can email us at jim.cates@cgonline.com if you've got a gardening question, lawn care question. Email us, and we'll get to it. On the flip side of the break, stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org. It's the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Yes.
Okie dokie. We're back with Dave Jackson, as we are each and every Friday between 10 and 11.
We are.
Something that was unique, I thought, in Annette's tips, and again, we're talking about the Jackson Greenhouse and Garden Center ad that's in the paper each and every Wednesday, folks. You ought to be reading it because it's a half a page. It's a great ad. And there's always a lawn or a gardening tip or two in it, and a lot of sales items. But something that we haven't talked about that Annette mentioned this week was garlic. Now is a good time to plant garlic.
It is.
Garlic that big of a seller?
Oh, yeah. We sell a lot of garlic. It's got so many health benefits, you can't.
What do you do with it?
What do you do with it? Yeah. Well, you mince it or with one of these garlic mincers and that kind of stuff and use it as a. And you can dry it and make a powder, or grind it, make a powder, whatever. It's in, you'd use it in any of your Italian dishes.
Yeah, I know, you know, on pizza, I guess you would use a little garlic on pizza and several Italian
spaghetti
dishes. Yeah. But it's that big of a seller?
We sell a lot of garlic.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Huh. That surprised me.
It does.
Yeah, I just wouldn't.
Well, it's a great thing to have in your garden, despite the fact that.
What does it do as far as having it in your garden? Does it run off insects? Does it.
Garlic.
Is it a repellent?
It can be used if you make it a powder and put it on your tomatoes and peppers in the spring. Garlic helps repel some insects. You would put it in a horticultural grade oil, and it can be used as a repellent. Or an insect repellent as well, but mostly it's for human consumption. It's good for your heart. It has real great healthy heart effects.
So if you were planting garlic, because again we plant a lot of tomatoes, we're going to plant more next year. If you were to plant garlic in a tomato garden, could you just let the plants go without treating them, doing anything? Would it serve as a repellent, or do you need to pull the garlic bulbs? Are they bulbs?
Yes, right.
Out of the ground, and then
cloves.
You need to.
You get them. You get, when you buy garlic, you get cloves or bulbs, depending on what kind of garlic. Elephant garlic, you buy the cloves because it's so huge that their separate cloves are about an inch and by 2 inches. And you plant those cloves, and then these cloves then divide and make what looks like an onion, but it's a segmented onion. It has about 12. Each garlic clove will make, each garlic bulb then when you pull it up will make 12 cloves. So it's a segmented onion, and it has the perennial. Fall is typically the best time to plant them, although honestly we sell more in the spring, but this year I was able to find a supplier that had nice garlic for sale this fall. And so that's, we're finishing up. It's typically we'd be done, but we've had such nice warm weather that I have 15 or 20 bags left of cloves of garlic.
So if you plant it now, it's going to lay dormant over the winter?
Right.
And then
it'll
have the spring harvest season, right?
You're not going to harvest anything this fall, for sure. You're going to get a root system. Get a development of a root system in the fall, while the temperatures are nice, and then in the spring, then the green top will shoot up, and you may get a small harvest. Typically, though, you let that go and harvest garlic in August, and that's when you'll have the better cloves and everything.
Okay. And then so you can have a spring harvest and then replant in the spring for an August harvest, so you can have two crops a year.
You possibly can, right. It's better. The true garlic growers plant it in September, October, and harvest the following August for the biggest production. And then they split the cloves and plant the cloves.
So leave it in the ground for 9 or 10 months. Then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's a better deal. But it's possible to get a few extra cloves in the spring late if you wanted to harvest a few. Then you'd have to reset, but you know, so that you'd have some left for fall production.
Okay, anything else, you know, in terms of
shallots,
something like garlic that you should be planting now and looking for a harvest in August or September of next year?
Right, shallots.
What's a shallot?
Shallot's a small onion type thing. That's the other one. They're all in the allium family, which is the onion family.
Now, are those your cocktail onions you're talking about?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
I knew the pro would know. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Okay. So if you are growing shallots, you need to get those in the ground now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be good for an August or a September harvest next year.
Right. And then you put some back in. I mean, once you have these, if you keep your own production then and keep it going. So we sell less of it because the gardeners that really work at it or pay attention to it can keep going with their own replants.
Okay. So basically, these are two plants you can just buy one time only.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're good to go. They're perennials. They're going to be around for a long, long time.
Yeah, except you have to reset
them.
They're
going to reproduce. And,
yeah, you have to reset them each year. But anyway, that's how I've we've had these requests for many years, and I just finally found a good supplier for these. They've realized that there is a market, and we were able to get in a couple of cases of that stuff.
Now, shallots, do they sell? Well, I guess they do, or you wouldn't have them at Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center.
Well, they don't sell as well as I wish, but it's all a matter of getting the gardeners attuned to it and knowing what it is and how they can grow it, what they can do with it.
Now, shallot taste strong? Strong taste?
It's a
mild?
No, it's shallots are going to be pretty oniony.
Okay, they're going to have a strong, strong bite.
Typically, in Kansas for sure. The further north you go, the milder they are. But
so they're normally grown commercially then north of here?
Typically, yeah.
Okay. But again, folks, if you're into shallots, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, it's your go-to source.
We try to be. We sure try to be.
Now, your biggest seller, you know, along those lines, wouldn't be garlic, would it? You know, if you're into the herbs and what have you, I would put garlic in the herb category.
Right.
What's number one?
In herbs?
Yeah.
Oh, I would say that probably basil.
Basil?
Probably. It's an annual.
That would be your number one seller.
Yeah, it's an annual, and people have to renew it. We grow three or four different crops a year, so that we always try to have some fresh basil on hand for them to grow.
Now that's more of a spring planting.
Well, typically in your garden, yeah. But folks that grow it in their kitchen would have some in their kitchen window. They can have a little fresh basil growing in a little pot next to their window in the kitchen.
All winter long.
All winter long.
Okay.
If they've got light, light is always the factor. Indoors, of course. But
so
anyway.
So you've got the ray of sunshine coming through your kitchen window. You can grow basil. You can grow fill in the blank. What else in your kitchen window?
Marjoram, thyme, garlic chives. You know, that would be the green part of the garlic that you harvest. All kinds of stuff, really. Parsley. Any of those kinds of things can be planted. Anyway, we're...
Here we go.
Here we go. What do we got?
Yeah, from Terrence, it says, Jim, don't you know anything? Garlic keeps vampires away, and it's also great on steak.
There you go. Yeah?
I don't think I've ever had garlic on a steak, have I? I'm trying to think. Is that in any traditional steak sauce?
Well, I don't know. We'd have to read the...
I don't think
I have to read the ingredients in the bottle. Probably garlic salt's a portion of your steak sauce.
Okay.
Probably. I mean, you see it on... If you're into reading labels, you see garlic in a lot of spice concoctions. For example, Montreal steak seasoning, I know, has garlic in it.
Okay.
If you've ever used Montreal steak seasoning.
I don't think so.
Really?
I use a lot of Worcestershire sauce. That's probably my number one.
Read the label. See what's in there.
Yeah. Need to do that.
Yeah, that'll be your job for next week.
I'll tell you, I learned so much sitting here. We need to take another break.
Oh,
Dave
really?
Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center.
Man.
It's 10:30. Stay tuned, folks. More to come.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. What we haven't done, we are 31 minutes deep into the show. We haven't talked about your specials at Jackson's this weekend.
Right. Well, we talked about what to do with your lawn and all of that kind of stuff. The clearance sale continues. Roses, buy one, get one free. Perennials, buy one, get one free. Container trees, buy one, get one free. Shrubs, evergreens, buy one, get one free. And the ball and burlap trees out back are 40% off. We unloaded another semi-load yesterday with one still to come on Monday. So we've got lots and lots of big trees. If you want the instant shade, 40% off. And, of course, we'll be happy to deliver and plant them for you as well as we get time. We're starting on... My landscape crew start on 15th and Adams, a new convenience store that's almost done over here. We'll be doing the landscaping over there. And so they're busy putting down some sod today in some small areas where we can't get to it with a machine. And then next week...
What do you mean, can't get to it with a machine?
Well, yeah, there's machines that you can use for the bigger sections that lay sod.
Seriously?
Yeah, oh yeah.
How can a machine lay sod?
Well, there has to be an operator on it. But it comes in rolls that are 42 inches wide that are on a tube, just like a big giant roll of toilet paper, basically, and the machine holds the sod out there and unrolls it, and two people follow to make sure it's placed and that the up against the next one, and they have this little tool that pushes the sod into place, and so you roll out the sod in 50 foot lengths or 35 or 40 foot lengths. That's 42 inches wide.
Really?
Yeah. You didn't.
I've never seen that. I suppose I just assumed you still laid sod the old fashioned method. You know what? 42 inches wide.
Well,
40 foot.
The old way, the hand way is 18 inches wide.
18 inches wide and about 3 foot long?
6 foot.
6 foot, okay.
One square yard at a time.
Yeah.
It used to be the way that it was always done.
Sure.
Of course, now that you let hydraulics and horsepower do the work for you, if you can.
How much time does that save on a major job percentage-wise?
Labor? I would say probably 80%.
Seriously?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Good night.
Well, a machine and two men can lay roughly, the man operating the machine and two guys can lay in a big open area, can easily lay 20,000 square feet, half an acre in a day without any trouble. compared to if you're doing it by hand and rolling it out, it would take six people to do 10,000 square feet, maybe a quarter of an acre.
Good night. So a huge labor savings.
Yes.
For you. Uh-huh. Of course,
oh, yeah.
I'm sure you have a little bit of money invested in the machinery.
Well, yeah, depends on how we want to do it. Sometimes we'll just subcontract with the guy that has the machine and the crew to get it done. Other times, when the crew has gone home to south of the border, we'll do it, and we rent the machine from him and have our guys do it.
And these sod strips come in 50-foot lengths.
It depends on how big your machine is. Anywhere from 25 to 50-foot lengths, 42 inches wide.
Huh. I'm trying to envision this in my mind. How would you, once you run out of this 50-foot length,
mm-hmm.
do you have to go back to the sod farm to get another
roll of sod? No, it comes on a semi, and you unload each one of those.
Huh.
On a pallet, and then just unload it.
So this would be more for your major commercial
development, right.
I'm sure.
Right.
If you're talking about sodding a typical lawn in Topeka,
mm-hmm.
in the city limits,
mm-hmm.
on an 80 by 120 lawn, then you're still looking at basically manual labor to do that as opposed to machine labor?
Oh, it depends on how the lawn's set up. If you can get to it with a machine, certainly they'll bring that out and then finish it off by hand with the smaller hand rolls or something like that, or cut the big rolls into small pieces where you have the curves and that kind of thing. You know, your machine's not going to be able to go around the corner. It's going to be strips, straight strips. But certainly, that's the way they...
Well, next time I see, you know, somebody laying sod, I'm going to have to pay more attention.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I'd love to see that in operation.
Well,
I can't envision how that would work.
I don't know exactly how we're going to do it over here at this spot. I would hope that possibly we would be able to accomplish some of it with the bigger rolls. But there's some narrow areas that just won't accommodate the machine.
15th and Adams?
Mm-hmm. That's right there at the exit of Adams and I-70.
It's on the south side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and right. they're about to open.
Well, they're close. Yeah, they're closing in on it. The final grade work's been done. The parking lot's done, and so
yeah.
Well, we're ready to go.
I hope it's a successful venture
mm-hmm.
for them. Yes, indeed.
So we sold a statuary of a big fountain yesterday, the third off. Somebody came in, took advantage of that. We have a new ship. About 2 weeks ago, a new shipment of statuary came in. So we're just... reason we can do a third off is we get, of course, special pricing on this, end of season pricing and special dating on the payment. So we took the chance and brought in another about a third or between a third and a half of a semi-load of statuary, and probably half semi-load.
Now, you talked about semi-loads of this and that. Going back, a semi-load of truck
mm-hmm.
trees.
Mm-hmm.
How many trees is that?
It depends on the size. I mean, if they're big trees, 2.5 or 3 inches in caliper, then you're only looking at 50 trees or so. But if you're looking at 1.5 inch caliper with the smaller ball, then there's going to be about 150
so
or 200.
Trees, they're coming out, they're laid down on
it's
the
a,
sides.
It's a flatbed, right. Flatbed right. trailer. They start from the back and load the balls with the trailer, with the trees laying to the back, and then the balls just lay forward. The forward with the ball, back with the top. They lay over, and of course then they pull a tarp over it so that the trees aren't whipped by the wind coming in from northern Missouri. Up, not quite to Cameron is where the load came in from yesterday. And or Morrison, Tennessee was where the load came in a couple weeks ago, and Grove, Oklahoma will be the load coming in Monday is the source of those trees. And so
I'll be, you know, I don't picture Grove, Oklahoma as a big tree growing area because you're talking about the Grand Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't envision
oh,
that area.
Oh, my goodness, is it
trees.
Ever? Oh, yeah. Tahlequah, Grove,
okay.
All that area down in there. There's the, with that Grand Lake, the
yeah.
way it's set up, I mean, they've got plenty of water. And then it drains kind of towards the lake or the river down there. And they have the catch ponds, and then they keep recycling the water up and back and up and back, and they just great growing tree growing area because of the milder weather, longer season, and then there used to be they used to use quite a lot of Indian labor on those farms. Evidently, there's a reservation down that direction. More now they use the immigrant labor.
Yeah.
But
yeah, Native American labor would be all over because you've got casinos all over that area, mm-hmm. which means mm-hmm. where there are casinos, there are Native Americans.
Right.
Yes, yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much of Oklahoma is reservation land.
I don't either.
A ton.
A whole lot of it.
Yeah.
Andrew Jackson moved all of the folks from Georgia and Florida over to Oklahoma.
That was the Trail of Tears, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
Yes.
That was Cherokee
kind
Nation.
Yeah. Cherokee, Choctaw. A number of them, but and it was a kind of a hard winter as they made the trail, and these indigenous folks weren't exactly ready for that. It'd be like taking the Hawaiians to Anchorage, I suppose.
But yeah.
It wouldn't be good. It wasn't good.
I know we went to Texas a few weeks ago, and we were on the Indian Nation Turnpike, which basically
runs
from south of Tulsa to the Texas line, or
mm-hmm.
very,
mm-hmm.
very close.
Yeah. Get to stop and throw money in.
Two or three times on the way down.
Yeah, it seemed like every time he got up to speed, he had to be slowing down again.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So there's a lot of semi-truck activity in and out of Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center.
Well, more than I ever dreamed of when we started this thing, that's for sure. But I guess we're thankful for the business and the opportunity Topeka's given us to grow, the citizens of Topeka.
You know, we talked about this a few months ago on the show. There's the special on the History Channel, and they've rerun it a couple of times.
Have they?
The world, what would it look like without humans, and, you know, what would we revert back to when Mother Nature completely took control again? And Shawnee County, as you pointed out, would be a forest.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about getting into the tree-growing business, since this is not a natural plains area we live in?
Mm-hmm.
We live in a forest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 200 years down the road, this would be a forest.
Again, right.
Yeah, again, yeah.
The dominant species. And we learned that when I took ecology at K-State. The dominant species would be the hardwoods, oak and hickory. After a first generation of cedars and evergreens, they'll spring up and go first, along with some of your smaller trees. Then eventually the dominant trees that would prevail in 200 years would be oak, hickory. Those kinds of things, walnut.
Interesting. Mother Nature's
interesting.
Still in control.
Mm-hmm. But no, to answer your question, no, I never really felt like growing trees was going to be my niche because at least ball and burlap, down in the valley, our soil is so sandy, those balls are quite difficult to, you'd have to wire basket each and every one, and the sandy soil is not as conducive to making a ball as is mm-hmm. Clay soil. So valley growers are not necessarily tree growers. In the Kaw Valley, at least, we have too much silt.
So that's not going to be in your future.
Well, never say never, but I'm getting pretty long into my future. So.
Yeah. Well, do catch that special if you ever have a chance on the History Channel. It's interesting as can be. Basically, major cities in this country, within 200 years, they're going to be all but gone.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just disintegrate. The skyscrapers, they're going to be falling over as a result of neglect within 200 years, and we just revert back to nature.
Mm-hmm.
And Chernobyl is a good example. Russia.
Is it?
Yeah, you know, what? Since they had the nuclear
spill, right?
You know, nobody lives there now.
Right.
And they've taken film footage of that community. Just, what, 30 years? Has that been 30 years?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's amazing
I think
what's happened in 30 years' time, how Mother Nature has reclaimed that city.
And that's pretty far north, isn't it? I mean, they're growing.
I think everything in Russia would be pretty far north.
Until you get down to Georgia and that area down, which is maybe on the same latitude as Nebraska, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah, that would be the southernmost. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Part of Russia. I don't know. But interesting as can be, just within a short period of time, Mother Nature has just reclaimed Chernobyl.
Yeah. Huh.
Quite a show. Which has
not all television is absolute wasteland. But unfortunately, I don't have Cox cable or anybody else. We don't watch television enough to
Well, you're too busy. Out of Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, and
we
keep
busy.
Talk about some of the things that keep you busy when we return. Stay tuned, folks.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience the local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Savings for everybody. We're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka. 272-6100.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back. Hey, real quick, coming up Monday on the show, we've got Jerry German Prey coming in.
Oh, boy.
You know
Am I off again? How'd that happen? There we go.
Turned you off. You know Jerry.
Sure.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It'll be an interesting show because we're going to be talking about gold, precious metals.
Right.
Yeah, is now a good time to invest in gold, the whole nine yards.
I'll be interested to see what he says. You'll have to remind me because I still can't get it up on my computer, but your show.
Well, that's a shame. That is a shame. Yes, indeed.
I just need to take the time to call the people and have them walk me through it, I guess.
Yep, yep. Very simple, very simple. Not that I would have a clue.
Right.
How to do that.
Not your job description.
Then we've got Coralie Evans, Lisa Cusick coming on before Jerry. They're going to be talking about antiques, antique investing.
Ah.
And preceding that, of course, Tim Rencher, City Hall and Courthouse Issues. We will have an elected official on the show between 9:15 and 10. Should have confirmation on that within the hour, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
So. Check it out on CG Online, and we'll have a full schedule up, folks. And next Friday, of course, Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center.
You ought to get Jay Emler on sometime again.
I don't know Jay Emler. He was in the paper today.
Yeah, he's a good guy. One of the good guys in the Senate that I really enjoyed. And we're still good, close friends. He's interestingly enough, he was not in favor of, he's on that committee, and he did not vote in favor of closing KNI.
Good for him.
And so I had a long chat with him as that came around and made sure that he understood the situation. and how that the residents there don't convert down to Parsons very well. That, but of course, it can be all about the dollars as well. The KNI ground is highly developable, while the stuff down in Parsons would be returned to nature in 200 years.
Yes.
There's really not much going on down there. But I mean, that's a nice big facility, great place, but just nothing else down there around it, nor is there much industry to support any kind of housing or anything else to develop that property.
Yeah.
Once the state gets quits using it, it's fairly of fairly low economic value. So anyway, that's...
Well, the person heading up this commission is from that part of the state.
Or at least on the committee. I don't know if they're heading it up, but they're on that committee.
Rochelle Cronister.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, she one of the committee heads?
Yes. I think she's heading it up as far as the official recommendation, keep Parsons open, shut down Topeka.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rochelle Cronister used to be a state representative from that general area.
Exactly. Yeah. You would remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, would have more of a tie and an allegiance to LeBette County and Shawnee County.
Well, certainly, sure. Of course, it has a bigger impact on LeBette County than KNI does on Shawnee. Not that, but if you focus on what's good for those residents,
yes.
Keeping KNI open and maybe bringing some other services in there, because it is underutilized, that whole property, there's a lot more uses that could be made.
Tree plantings.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. The state could figure out a way to lose money on tree plantings.
Now, Jay Emler represents Hutchison, Reno County,
Lindsberg.
That area.
Lindsberg.
He's right,
Lindsberg McPherson. He had a law office actually in McPherson and lives. He considers himself to be a Lindsberg resident. So he lives kind of halfway between. Jay is an interesting individual, raises llamas.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Emler, I assume that's Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in
Lindsberg.
That would make sense.
Just outside of Lindsberg, anyway. But yes. Okay. So anyway, we need to talk a little bit too yet, and in the ad, we need to finish that off. Dutch bulbs, 25% off still. Amaryllis just came in for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful big bulbs, same price as last year. Even though the bulbs are a little bit nicer, I think, and so there's still plenty of opportunity to plant bulbs, and we're selling lots of them like crazy. We also have been running the ad about bringing your plant into transplant, and or we've had lots of people bringing in plants, house plants for us to transplant. And this morning, Adonna's going over to some lady's house that has a plant that's too big to carry in, and doing a transplant job over there. Plant maintenance girl will put you on the schedule and plant in your house if you need to. So we do that. Christmas coming. Oh, by the way, we have house plants 25% off. Lots of people coming in and taking advantage of that little sale.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas cactus are there that we've grown ourselves. Christmas decorations. Annette's Corner, the west end of the garden center, is set up and ready, and you can go in and get some good ideas. She just does some spectacular Christmas trees. Of course, coming in before long are all the Fraser firs from North Carolina. For the first year ever, we're going to sell, we'll have a couple hundred Christmas trees, live, fresh Christmas trees.
And for those of you that used to purchase a tree at Hefner's, 6th and Fairlawn,
right?
Same distributor.
Same guys growing
same
it.
Same guy.
The Carpenter
so.
Family in North Carolina, good
okay.
people.
So
good people.
If you enjoyed the trees you got at Hefner's a year ago,
right.
or for several seasons back,
mm-hmm.
go to Jackson's 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road, and those are going to be the same trees.
Yep.
Okay.
And, of course, then we're having our November 21st, we're having our open Christmas open house.
Yep.
Annette and I will be doing chili. Hers is the white chili. Mine is the Dave Special Chili. And chili dogs for the kids or somebody, if you don't want a whole bowl of chili, we can have a chili dog as well. Free of charge. You can donate if they wish to Helping Hands Humane Society. We have a bucket there to throw some money in for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got my shopping done and ready to go forward with my chili next week after we get this game out of the way. And So, and then we've had a little coupon at the bottom of this ad for $5 off any $25 purchase of regular priced items. It's a, you have to read all the way to the bottom of the ad. I always try to put a reward down at the bottom of the ad. If you
coupon's good for how long?
Well, as long as I have Christmas stuff that's priced at the regular price all the way through to Christmas. Been selling a lot of poinsettias this past week, believe it or not. The Cortez Red is looking just gorgeous right now. And so people are taking poinsettias home already.
And you do deliver as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We deliver lots and lots of poinsettias. And if you're... we can deliver individually. If you're, for example, a firm that wants to say thank you to its clients, a book, an audit, you know, accounting firm, lawyer firm, whatever, just get us the name, address, and phone number of the people you want them delivered to, and we'll do that on a case-by-case basis. And based on your quantity, you get quantity discounts. So it's we can deliver poinsettias in quantities, but individually to clients at a price roughly 40% less than you'd pay a florist, but the same quality poinsettia. I mean, or even better because it's homegrown. Mm-hmm. So anyway, all of that's available at our place. And so just give us a call, shop locally, and we'll get the job done for you.
We're just about out of time. Not a lot of time left, Dave Jackson. But, you know, several times during the course of this hour, in fact, over the course of the year, you have mentioned when we're talking about your ads and talking about your sale items and what have you, same price as last year. Has anything really spiked either up or down this year? Because it seems like in your business, prices have pretty much held.
Mm-hmm.
You're not seeing big spikes upward or downward.
Right.
Either one. Is there anything out there that really... it's a lot more expensive this year or a lot less expensive this year?
The wholesale nursery growers, good question. The wholesale nursery growers, especially container growers, are running way more clearance or sale items. And so that's what we've been doing is picking up sale items on nursery stock, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as you can see from the ad, passing on the savings and even more to our customers,
mm-hmm.
through special offers on certain things. And so I'd have to say overall that our average cost has gone down, not on all the items, of course. There's some specialty items that the price maintains the same. But when owners or growers get long on something, if you see on their availability that they've got 6,000 or 7,000 of these things available, I'm able to pick stuff up at 25 to 40% off, and then we've been passing the savings on. So, yeah, that's down. Bulbs, of course, locked in. That has to do with the price of the euro against the dollar and the growers. That gets locked in a year ahead of time so that they know that what you're going to pay. Naturally, now next year, bulbs are going to go up because the dollar's down against the euro,
mm-hmm.
at this point. We know that already, so because that's when they start taking the orders for the bulbs, they've already bought the dollars against the euros. So, you know, it's not necessarily cost of production. It's a cost of the money rate exchange, stuff coming in from overseas. So you'll see a big spike in bulb prices next year. Another good reason to buy them this year.
Buy them now.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. I think we're going to see a round of inflation that's going to hit us next year.
Oh, my goodness.
Lots of items.
It's got to. Really got to on some people. Because so much of this stuff comes in from China, and our balance of trade there is... shall we say, somewhat out of whack.
The value of our dollar just keeps going down. So,
right.
Folks, if you can buy it now. Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road, 232-3416. Dave, we will see you next Friday and bring home a winner Saturday at the K-State game. Folks, have a great weekend. I'll be back with you Monday morning at 8. I'm Jim Cates.